3.
Can I do the intro?
2. 1.
Welcome, welcome. You are listening to their podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. His name is Mark. He is a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And they've got a real cool guest sitting on their couch today.
Yes, we absolutely do. Hey, everyone, it's Amanda. And guess who's back again? It's Nikki.
I think that's going to be the new thing. I think we're going to have every guest do the intro.
I feel like for
the
next little
while. They all have it memorized like I do.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think it'll be fun to listen to them to do it.
Yeah, like what's, you know, when like talk shows are losing one of the hosts and then they like audition co-hosts, we'll have people come in and do their version of the intro and see who's we like.
I'll judge it.
Well, Nikki's back again for the umpteenth time. I'm not even going to try to pretend I know how many times she's been on this couch.
6, 7, I don't know.
You're regular.
We had a tradition. I was actually just telling my cousin about this. She called me just as I was about to come in here.
Which cousin?
The cousin I speak to daily. The white one. The blonde one.
The white blonde one. Right.
Well, I was talking to her on the way here and I said, oh, I'm just about to go record a podcast.
She has round eyes and a long nose.
She absolutely. Oh, no. You know what? She has very round eyes. Like she's got like the typical doe eyes. Like they're just cartoon-like, actually. If she's listening, you have beautiful cartoon eyes, but she doesn't have a long nose. It's very short.
I mean,
little button nose.
Long nose by comparison to my Asian brethren.
Oh, you mean because it's not like...
Yes.
Like flatter? Yeah, okay. Yes. It's not flat. What, you're right.
You mean... Okay, yes.
Okay, before that. Anybody thinks that everyone in this room is racist, we were talking about this before.
Or you can think we're
I
racist.
Know, this is very strange. I'm just realizing nobody heard the off-mic conversation, so this all sounds really weird. So let's start that again. We've got Nikki on the couch today. And yes, I was telling my cousin with the doe eyes that I was coming in to record a podcast, and she said, oh, what's the topic? And I said, well, we started this tradition years ago. I don't know how it started, but we can't stop now, where every time Nikki comes back from traveling, we have her come in and we talk a little bit. I mean, she's been back for quite a while. We sort of dropped the ball, but that's okay. We can still talk a little bit about the travels. And also, I did just spring on her that I want her to write an article for the next Massage Therapy Media publication. And the topic is kind of interesting, so we might talk about a little bit of it today. But I still want her to write the article. So hopefully, this will be like a brainstorming session for her to get out all of her thoughts, and then she can put it on paper for me.
Right, I'll just listen to this and transcribe it.
That can work.
I think that works perfectly.
Like, here, I wrote the article.
I think I was there. So if people still need an introduction, who are you over there?
Hi, everybody. I'm Nikki, and I am a massage therapist in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I've been on this podcast 742 times. And it's always been delightful. And I'm happy to be here again.
Would you ever want to be a massage therapist other than Toronto, Ontario, Canada? Do you want to pick up and move and do this work somewhere else?
That's a good question. I don't know. Well, probably not. So I would totally 100% live in, if I lived anywhere else, it would be London, England.
Okay.
That's always been my go-to.
Why? Seems very gray.
It is gray. I don't mind gray. I love British culture. I grew up listening to Britpop. Mm-hmm. I just went to London this summer to see Blur. Mm-hmm.
That would have been really
fun. One of my all-time favorite bands. I saw them play Wembley Stadium. I love England. I love English accents. Mm-hmm. I love England so much.
Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles. Sorry. You look like a Stones guy.
I'm probably more of a Stones guy.
Yeah, you look like a Stones guy. No, I'm a Beatles girl. I grew up with them.
The Rolling Stones, it's Keith Richards' band. I didn't realize that until I started hearing him a lot in interview. Okay. It's his band. He runs the show on that band.
Really?
It's insane. He runs the show.
I can't imagine being involved in any operation that is run by that man.
He runs the show.
You know, clearly he's
I don't know, man.
I was listening to him on Howard Stern. It's his band. He runs the show 100%, which I would have never thought. I thought it was a Mick Jagger deal, but it's not. It's a Keith Richards deal. Without Keith Richards, there is no Rolling Stones at all. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about other British musicians that are good musicians.
Huh.
So, for example, couldn't care less for John Bonham's drumming.
Really?
Yeah. He's like...
Tough crowd.
He just hits and he just hits hard. He's like, that's not for me.
John's spinning in his grave. He's like damn you.
He's like Keith Moon. I enjoy The Who. He's like, but Keith Moon's drumming would drive me insane. I'm so glad
you just said, I enjoy the Who. When you said Keith Moon, I'm like, I know the name. Yeah. I don't know who that is.
I would never want him in my band. I would never want to play music with him. That's what he says. He's like, and on top of that, he can probably only play with the Who. Like he's limited in this is the way he talks about it. I was like blown away. I'm like, I never thought of it like this. Cause these cats, like the Rolling Stones.
Was he on Stern? Is that where he
yeah,
was?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then I also saw him on another interview. I can't remember who it was with. And it came out again, like where it's like, it's his band. Like he is the one that calls the shots. He is the one that writes a lot of the music.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's insane. Cause again, I wouldn't have thought that. And it was really interesting.
Yeah, I got nothing against the Stones, but I'm definitely a Beatles girl at heart. I grew up with them. Like my mom probably still has a crush on Paul McCartney. Like my dad.
Paul McCartney
a
just looks
fan.
Like a he looks like an old grandma now.
that is true. No, he does have fairly feminine features. It might be from surgery too.
On top of that, your testosterone's gone. Of course you're gonna get a little soft.
A sweet little face. He's a sweet little man.
There's a very funny meme with a bunch of musicians. It's like Steven Tyler. John Bon Jovi. I can't remember who else. There's two others. And it's like, when did your favorite rockers end up looking like your grandma? Because they all got the gray hair and the plastic surgery with the kind of, that it makes them have like slightly more feminine features. Anyway.
Yeah. I saw Ringo last year at Casinorama. It was great. It was good fun. Jolly good fun. But I was like, Ringo, bless your heart. You don't have brown hair anymore. Like he's got this full head of brown hair. I was like, that's cute.
Oh, that's like Schwarzenegger, who's doing a bunch of interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm like...
For his new book, Be Useful.
It sounds like it's a fabulous
book. I want to read it. Honestly, I saw the documentary on him and I was
blown away. The Netflix documentary?
Yeah, I saw the Netflix documentary and I was
really
like,
good.
This guy is...
He's a fucking... He's a beast.
I've been talking to my personal trainer about him because my trainer has like read his books.
Yeah.
And, you know, loves him. We talk about pumping iron.
He's a really interesting, inspirational, smart dude. And you don't get that just by looking at him. Because
he looks
he's
like
a Hollywood actor.
He looks like a meathead.
He looks like a meathead.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. The accent doesn't help you think he's smart. Do you know what I mean? You put it all together and you're like, this guy's a dope. He's a really fucking smart dude.
He's the best at everything he touches. Yeah. Like he was the best in bodybuilding.
Because he cares to be the best at everything he touches.
Yeah. And then he became like the best in
action films.
Like, box office.
Then he moved it into comedy.
Then he's like, oh, I'm going to go be the freaking governor of a country I wasn't even born in. Like, he's just the best.
Was he talking? He was talking about twins. Was it in that documentary or was it an interview I saw him with? He was talking about making twins.
With Danny DeVito.
Right. And I think Ivan Reitman was producing or whatever the case is. And he wanted to get into doing comedy movies after doing all these action movies. And then he approached the studio and says, like, I want to be in a comedy. I want to do a comedy. They're like, no. You're an action star. Like, we'll front the money on you in action
movies. How could they not see that a gigantic person like him with the accent he had wouldn't be funny?
We'll front the money. the studio will front the money for any action movie you want to make. But this comedy bullshit, no way. Those cats all did it for no pay, all points, all percentage on the back end. They made a fucking killing.
Yeah.
They made a fucking... They all said, forget it. We'll make this movie. Don't pay us anything, but we're taking huge points on the back end. And they all made a fucking killing off of that.
Yeah, that's
insane.
How you do it. Sometimes I wonder, like Danny Elfman wrote, he's a composer. He's my favorite composer. He does all the music for the Tim Burton movies, but he also wrote the theme song to The Simpsons.
Mm.
And I'm always like, does he get a cut
every
time that song airs?
Absolutely.
That is madness. But to answer your original question, I would live in London, England. I don't know if I would do massage there because I don't know what massaging is like there. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, like, we've talked about this so many times before that I got into massage primarily for money and job security.
Right.
And the reason why I like doing it in Ontario is because it's covered by insurance.
Well,
so
supposedly,
it's just like a sure thing.
I don't know. Don't quote me on this, but I was seeing a discussion recently about how massage, I can't remember. Okay. I want to say it was online somewhere, okay. But it was That's talking about, it was a whole discussion about how, like, when people come to Canada, it's really difficult for certain professions to get into your profession where you were internationally trained.
Right.
And the person was trying to make a point how actually a lot of these people, the education that they went through, because is like far superior to like any North American education that they would get. So any Canadian university they would go to, they actually had a more superior education, but they still come to Canada and can't work. Anyway, massage therapy was brought up in this discussion. Mm-hmm. And supposedly in England, it actually is like a big deal. It is healthcare and it their training is rather intense. Now, don't quote me on this. I don't know, but that's what I saw. So maybe you would have that security treating in London, England.
Maybe, yeah. If the job security were there, I would do it. Job security is always like, that's what I chase most. So if it were there. So yeah, I don't know if I would massage in England. Mm-hmm. I would live in England because I like that it's English speaking because mm-hmm. I wouldn't fare well in many other places.
That's
and
fair.
I love Europe. I love every time I visit any country in Europe, I'm like, this is the best place in the world. And then I'll see another country. I'm like, this is the best place in the world.
It's a feeling, man. Because I know we've talked, the three of us have talked about this, how Mark doesn't really love travel and he doesn't really have a huge desire to go to Europe.
Bananas.
I have only ever been, I've not been to all the places I would have loved to go. Bananas. I've only ever been to, I've been to England three times. I've been to Ireland once and to Scotland. Like I've only traveled around.
You're like
there.
A UK person.
Yeah.
UK
and traveling. I loved every bit of both of my trips to the UK. Like I loved being in London, even though it rained the entire effing time I was there.
It'll do that.
I loved every bit of it. I love just the look and the feel of everywhere I went. Mm. I spent way too much money because shopping was not cheap there, but I loved it. I can see why you would want to live there. I mean, it's not always gray. It just happens to be every time I go.
Yeah, I love that it's once you're in Europe, you're in Europe.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say.
I have a friend.
You take trains everywhere.
Yeah, I have a friend who, I met her in Mexico. She's from Cambridge, England. And we actually met up again. So I met her in January in Mexico. And then I went to the UK in July and I met up with her in her hometown of Cambridge. And you just follow her on Instagram. Every week she's in a different country.
Yes.
It's Europe. She's just like,
it's like your
she's
cousin.
Like, I'm in Romania right now. Yeah. And now I'm going to.
Your cousin woke up in France this morning. Yeah. Like I saw like a bonjour with a croissant and I'm like, oh, she's
a,
because
a hop,
she lives in London, England. So anytime I see her post, they're traveling around.
This
it's
is
so easy.
This is the coolest part. Seeing everyone of every single different color and shade, all with a British accent. That is the coolest part. That is the coolest part.
Yeah, you know what?
They probably think the same about us. Like, you know, Toronto is every color and shade and it's like, oh, they've all got these Canadian accents.
I love seeing the Chinese guy with the British accent.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I like that.
You know what I found was really interesting?
I like to see the East Indian guy with the British accent.
The East Indian guys. Indian food is like, I don't know if it's just the part where I was staying with friends in Manchester.
That's what happens when
like Indian
England
food is like
when England colonizes
everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. literally every turn there's an Indian takeaway.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, anyone want like butter chicken? Because it's everywhere.
Well, that's why you can always find curry in a British pub.
Always, yeah.
Yeah. Some of it's decent. So but as far as like living in Canada, it's Toronto or bust. I can't go anywhere. I gotta have my concerts, so it's gotta be Toronto.
I have a friend who was living downtown Toronto and then he moved back to the suburbs, so he's in Scarborough now. And I think he's had this moment where he's like, I wanna live easier. I want to have I don't want to pay as much for things. I want an easier commute.
Less
congestion. I hate traffic.
Yeah.
I want a bigger house and pay a lot less for it, but he also wants to be in a metro city with a lot of different ethnicities. So he thought of Calgary. And he said Calgary is multicultural.
It's
by comparison.
The multicultural thing is really important to him. I mean, they're foodies, this couple, and he's
like
himself
a red card
chef. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Whatever that means.
So if he can't
find, I don't know what that means, but chef.
Yeah.
But if he can't find like a Chinese supermarket in his neighborhood, it's not his neighborhood. You know, like he needs to be somewhere where he can get the foods he wants. Yeah. And we are so spoiled here. Like he was living downtown Toronto, easy peasy. And then he moved to Scarborough, easy peasy to find anything you need. Yeah. So he wanted to make sure that Calgary could offer that same diversity.
Him and his wife went out to Calgary for like 3 days to check everything out. From everything, I want to see how long it takes me to drive across town in rush hour traffic. Do you know what I mean? And it just so happens to be like Calgary got a shit ton of snow.
Yeah. They got dumped on.
But that's Alberta. That's Calgary.
I went to Calgary for the first... I was actually born in Alberta, but I don't remember it. Mm. We moved to Ontario the day after my first birthday. And
I don't think I remember that far back either. I don't think I remember that far back.
Yeah, I have no memories from there. Yeah. So last summer, I did Alberta and BC with my mom.
Yep.
And we started in Calgary, and I'd never been. Mm-hmm. And it's small.
Yes.
Especially compared to Toronto. You know, I'm spoiled. But I was actually really impressed. I really liked the architecture, which I'm not a huge architecture buff. But everywhere I went, I was like, there was outdoor art and the buildings were cool. And I thought it was really neat. And we checked into our hotel. And there was a guy who worked there, and he had darker skin, and his name tag said Imad, which is a common name in Egypt, and I'm Egyptian.
Right.
So I just asked him, I was like, Imad, are you Egyptian? Guy lost his mind. He was like, oh my God, because he's in Calgary. So
I guess there's not a lot of Egyptians in Calgary.
Like, yeah, I'm from Egypt, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, Coptic or Muslim, which I don't normally like ask people what their religion is, but once you make that connection, you can. So basically Egypt is a 90% Muslim country, and the other 10% is mostly Coptic, which is their version of Orthodox Christian.
Okay.
And then they have like, there's like one Jewish family there. There's like one synagogue in Cairo, but everybody's religious. Like, no, I had to try to explain this to my Egyptian tour guides when I was there. Like, they were asking me about the religion in Canada. And I was like, well, we kind of have everything, but also nothing. Like, I was like, most of my friends are agnostic or atheist. And she didn't understand. She's like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, most of my friends don't believe in God. And it was like, what? Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
So I found out this guy was Coptic, which is the same religion that my dad was. So it's a religion that I grew up with. So all of a sudden we're like best friends, like this, you know, where he was sending champagne to the hotel room. Aww. And like he bought us tea, like I think he Egyptian tea. And like, I don't know where he got this stuff, but he was just
going to show up and be like, hey man, I'm Egyptian too.
He was so excited to
this
just
has to
see
this has
another
to tell
Egyptian.
Us, though,
and I was like, why did you choose Calgary of all places?
This has to tell us that Calgary has nowhere near the diversity.
No,
but Toronto.
My friend was also looking for like a large Chinese population.
Yeah, he wanted to make sure that there. Yeah, he wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to be the only Chinese family living in Calgary.
That's fair.
Which kind of segues into what we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
But before we do, can I, because you guys have been like, you know, all agreeing and lovey-dovey, can I throw a grenade in here and run away?
Go nuts.
Because you guys disagree on something.
It might be a dud.
Is it the video with the white girl?
It is the video with the white girl. So I'm going to preface this. So Mark found a video and he sent it to me first, and it's
that
a
video
a young,
gone crazy.
It's
heard,
a young woman.
I heard
yeah,
someone
it's
on the
been
radio
everywhere.
Playing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Where
oh, yeah.
did you find it?
I saw it on Twitter.
So the video is...
I saw it on X.
Okay, is a young ahead, woman.
X, formerly known as Twatter. Ooh. Well,
this young woman is in her 20s and she's gotten her first job out of college. And so she did all the things, right? She went and got a degree and now she's graduated and she's got a job and she's realizing that adulting does in fact suck because she's got to commute 1 to 1 hour and 15 minutes each way.
Okay.
And then she's working 9 to 5. So okay. Basically what she had explained is she gets on a train at 7:30 a.m. She doesn't arrive home until about 6:15, 6:30 p.m.
Okay.
And can I finish?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. But,
right?
But it's more than she's explaining this. It's not I'm explaining this.
This will be for your part of the argument. I'm just throwing the grenade.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So
catch it and throw it back.
She is very, very upset. She's like crying and says, like, am I just being overly dramatic? But basically with this schedule, I get home at 6:30 p.m. And in that time, I have to cook dinner. I have to eat dinner. I want to shower and I want to go to bed at a decent time because I got to get up really early and do this again.
Okay.
And she's like, how do people have time for friends, for a social life? Like, I don't even feel like making my own dinner. Never mind working out anymore. Like, that's gone out the window. So there's two camps of people. Camp number one, which is I wholeheartedly agree. The 9 to 5 schedule is just insane. People are not meant to work majority of their life and not actually live.
Okay.
And then there's Mark and his crew.
No, suck it up, buttercup. I don't know if I'm a suck it up buttercup, but I'll wait.
Okay. So then the other camp of people is just saying, but this is life. You know, this is what we all do. And so I'm going to give my two cents, then I'm going to walk away. This is what we all do. We all graduate from school. Okay. We work our asses off. We retire. A lot of people do feel the way she does. They maybe don't cry about it on the internet, but they do feel that way.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Now they're, our people, and this is what I was saying to Mark. I said, society as a whole is finally starting to all collectively agree.
North American society?
The world.
Are we talking about the world?
I'm talking about North America. I'm not talking about the entire world. Because I know you've got your your other comparisons.
I'm just asking.
So North Americans are realizing, or the Western world is realizing, that it doesn't make sense that you spend majority of your life just slaving away, barely get any time to enjoy anything. Everything's so expensive that you have no option but to work all the time. And then by the time you can finally, I'm putting in air quotes, enjoy your life, you're old and then you die.
Okay.
So collectively, I understand why people agree with her, because everybody's sort of waking up to the fact that we spend an extraordinary amount of our time just working, and majority of people who are not entrepreneurs like the three of us in this room end up working their asses off for very little pay to make somebody else rich. And
I hate that part of it.
That's where I'm just throwing the grenade. And that this is where the division is. So usually Mark and Nikki are pretty much on the same page, but in this case they have differing thoughts. So I wanted you guys to actually talk so people can hear both sides and get an idea, like, where do we sit on this, or is there a middle ground?
Go ahead.
You want me
but
to
you
talk
wanted
first?
To talk so much.
Yeah, I'm like, I want
I know I'm gonna I,
okay, so basically there's this video, as you described, with this young woman just kind of she was exasperated, and she was like, basically she was like, holy crap, how do people do this?
Yeah,
like, I just started out in this type of life.
Yes.
How do people do this?
Right.
And Mark Sheridan.
Well, there's probably a lot of people that think that, right? And maybe I thought like that. Maybe I did. I know I didn't, but
so
whatever.
Mark shared
maybe
this,
you did.
And
maybe
I think,
you did.
Well, I think your comment was just really,
really,
like, that was all you
shared.
And I was like, oh, if Mark, I gotta watch this. So I watched it. And my first instinct was like, people are going to tear this poor girl apart. They're going to be like, welcome to the real world. That's adulthood. Like, every, you know, there's the whole stereotype of like everybody who's under 40 or whatever is like spoiled and entitled. And
which I said to Mark, which they said about my generation too.
I do not think.
Everybody thinks that about
younger
people,
right? I do not think that that video and the opinions expressed in that video, I do not think that represents young people. I don't think so. I don't think that represents the majority of young people.
There's
maybe
no way,
I'm wrong.
There's no way it can represent all young people.
Exactly.
Because like I said, just like in my generation, I mean, yes, I'm an older millennial, so I don't even know if I count, but it was always like millennials are whiny and entitled
but
and
anyway.
Don't want to work and they think they can just do anything.
It was,
and now it's moved on to Gen Z. They're whiny, they're entitled, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so I had commented. I just said, you know, I know she's going to get a lot of pushback and a lot of people are going to criticize her for being whiny and entitled and precious. But I was like, yeah, I agree. I'm with her. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived that life briefly. I did the whole go to university, come out, get an office job.
Right.
You know, I was living with my parents in Oakville, which is a suburb of Toronto. Mm-hmm. I was waking up at 5 a.m. to work out in my parents' basement, listening to Foo Fighters on CD because I didn't have an MP3 player at the time. And then I would take the train into Toronto, like work at a job I hated, making like $15 an hour, and take the train back home. And it was crowded. And I would get home at like 7:00. And then, you know, you got to make dinner and whatever. I'd have to be in bed by 10:00 to do it all over again. And it sucked and I hated it. And I use that as motivation to get out of that. Like, to me, I'm all about taking absolute responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that kind of lifestyle sucks. And yeah, a lot of people live it. Like, a lot of people will sit in their cars in rush hour for hour and a half, 2 hours each way.
Yeah.
And to get to a job that they hate, to make enough money to pay for their house in the suburbs and the car that they use to get to work. And it's this whole cycle. And I think that's probably what most people do. And she was exasperated, and I, you know, I don't blame her. And a lot of people would be like, welcome to adulthood. That's the grind. Like, that's life. And it is for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be. And I made different choices. Now, like, we're all self-employed. We have our own struggles. Like, yeah, I'm not commuting and I'm not working for somebody else, but I still have to hustle. I still am constantly promoting myself. I still have to fill in the gaps in my schedule and manage everything. Like, it's just, it's, you choose the life that you want, exactly. And then you have to make the sacrifices in order to get that.
Exactly.
And so she has choices. She can stick with this, which I think is what most people do, and complain about it and just be kind of miserable, which is probably what most people do. Or she can do what I did, which is like hate that type of lifestyle so much, mm-hmm. that it lights a fire under your ass to get out and do something different. So mm-hmm. this could be excellent fuel for her.
Yeah.
Could be.
But I'm not saying like she's right. Everybody fresh out of university should be given like a 6-figure job.
Oh God, no.
Working, you
for
know,
me, it's not
10
even
a, a.m.
For me, it's
p.m.
not even
like,
about the 6-figure job. She even said in the video, like, I like my job. I like
yeah,
doing
she didn't
what
have
I do.
An issue with her job. It was right? the no time for life.
The whole idea of
she's not wrong.
The whole idea of I'm going to complain that I got to find my way to work. And then when my work hours stop, when I don't get paid, I suddenly magically can't appear at home. I have to find my way back home. And this is oh so terrible. Like you said, you make choices. You don't have to do this job. You can go find other things to do.
Or living closer. You can find the remote job you
right,
want.
Right,
well, remember, she said living closer is not an option because she can't afford to live in the city because the city is crazy.
You right. make choices, like yep. you said, right? You're choosing to do this thing. And I get it. To me, her schedule is really not all that crazy. Like when I'm listening to her talk about
it's,
like,
it's new. It's new to her.
Exactly. But it's not even
That's
all that
what
nuts.
It is. It's
I'm like,
new.
I'm like, you still have more than 12 hours that you're not working in a 24-hour day. Do you know what I mean? Like there are people like people in this room that spend more time sitting in a single chair in their office than you spend in your waking up and your commute and going to work and your commute back home. But any which way, that doesn't matter. I just am like, why are you complaining like this? Like to me, you're just complaining about life now, right? And I can understand, I understand where the complaint is coming from, but you have so many choices and you can do different things if you want to. Just to complain about life to me is kind of weird.
I don't
That's
think
all.
I didn't see it as I don't
I
think
felt
she was like
I
got the vibe that she was like, how do people do this? Not like this sucks and I hate everything and this yeah. isn't fair. She was like, I like my job, but everything around getting there and getting back, she's like, this is a lot and it's dark and I'm tired and She's
she even
like,
she even said, "Am I just being dramatic?"
This?
She's like, "Plus, I have my period, so maybe
oh,
that's
yeah,
why."
She was like, I'm on my period.
Can you? We talked about Arnold Schwarzenegger earlier. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What Governor Schwarzenegger, poor fucking kid in Austria. All he wants to do is go to America. Finds his way into America by way of fucking bodybuilding, decides when he gets here, I want to be an actor, drops everything to become an actor, goes back to bodybuilding. Can you imagine? His book is all about just fucking wake up and do the stuff and work hard.
That's the other thing.
Listen, the people that woke up and worked hard afforded you the possibility to even have what you have right now. If everyone thought the way you think right now, you wouldn't even have this opportunity to sit around complaining about this opportunity that you have. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a little weird to me that way.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, and I can't stand the idea of, well, you're working for someone and all you're doing is feeding the rich pocket. Well, that rich pocket is fucking feeding you, so shut your fucking hole.
Yeah,
if that
rich
pocket, if that rich pocket didn't exist, you wouldn't have a fucking job and you'd be doing next to nothing. So what is this? I don't want to work for people and make people more rich. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me?
We
Are
also, I feel like as North Americans, we don't know what real work is. Like you,
thank you.
That's, like, that was where Mark
you
want to
see. It's
yeah.
true. You know, it's her. She was a little precious, and like if you know, you're gonna post a video of yourself complaining. But if you're a young, you know,
but
she's like
it.
A cute, pretty blonde girl complaining about something on the internet, she's gonna get torn to shreds.
But I get
and,
it.
You know, bless
I get
her
it.
Heart.
I get it. I get it. It's culture shock to you. And you feel like it's overwhelming.
Yes.
And you will grow out of that.
So that is the middle ground I was kind of looking for from you guys, because I watched that video and I actually saw what Nikki saw in the sense that I didn't actually look at this as a girl complaining. I looked at this as a girl who was not prepared for real life, mm-hmm. who didn't actually realize. And I said this to Mark. I said, I can't remember, but I assume when myself and my friends got out of university, we were like, holy fuck. We just spent the last 4 years partying, having little to no responsibility other than studying for a test that, like, no offense, it was really not that hard. I mean, university was really not that difficult. You didn't have a ton of responsibility. I mean, some people are going to say, yes, it was. Well, I mean, my program wasn't that difficult. I saw her as somebody who really was in shock of, like, I cannot believe people do this. And it's that moment. It's like, to me, I compared it to like the new mother too. At that moment of, is this my fucking life? And you need somebody. And I wish that people would have been a little more supportive with her and like, no, this is your life right now. You know, this is new to you. This doesn't have to be forever. This is giving you a chance to maybe get some experience. Maybe then getting this experience is going to help you open doors to get a job that's closer, get a job that's better hours for you and all of these things.
Also, the whole idea to me of, where's paying your dues? Where is the idea that I climb a ladder? I climb the hill.
And that's the thing, is that expectation needs to be there. And it's, I think that it's not quite as there. And it's probably my generation's fault. I mean, we get blamed for everything. So let's just blame the millennials.
Opportunity comes when you start from the bottom.
It's hard to see that though, honestly, when you're, I'm not.
I blame American Idol.
I'm not defending people who whine about life, because I, like both of you, believe that you create your own life. You have choices, and every day you have a choice. Complain about what is my reality right now, or start making steps to change my reality right now. And if you're going to stay in the reality, what is the purpose of complaining about it? You're making it worse for yourself. Like, you are doing this to yourself in this cycle.
Well, if you complain about it, then it's not your fault.
Then you have to pass blame. But like I said, it doesn't change the world you live in. It's the expectation that needs to change of that. Things are going to be like Mark loves to say, when you first start anything, you got to eat a little shit. And then things start to get better. Nothing is going to be easy right away. Nothing worth doing is going to be easy right away. But that expectation, I feel like, exists less and less, because you can get famous by going on TikTok.
Right.
You can have a YouTube channel and make millions of dollars by people watching you cook. You can sell pictures of your feet.
That is like, still, that is still, listen.
I haven't taken that off the table. I have really nice feet.
My feet are tattooed, so I can't hide them.
Something, you work hard at it. That's all there is to it.
If you work hard for it,
doesn't mean it's going to happen. But guess what? Not working hard for it is also a way to guarantee it's not going to happen.
Right.
Even the fucking chick that shows her asshole on OnlyFans is working hard because she's spending time to make content and finding a photographer, finding a videographer, and hustling.
And she found the right soap to make her asshole bubblegum pink. By the way, that's a thing.
And hustling on Twitter and everywhere else to draw people into her OnlyFans. She's working hard. She's still working fucking hard.
So,
she's not sitting back doing nothing, trying to collect subscriptions on OnlyFans.
So
do you see what I'm saying?
Here's the thing.
So to me, it doesn't matter the type of work.
If you want something, you work hard for it. You want something, you work hard for it. And the thing that I think we all need to have,
it feels so weird.
It's weird, right?
Weird to me, yeah.
I want you to delete the whole sentence I said, because it was really gross. Anyway. The thing that I just wish people had, like, it's hard on the internet, because everybody just, I think, like, the minute you go online, immediately you've got, like, your defenses up. Like, who's going to say something ridiculous today that I'm going to roll my eyes? Like, people go in with daggers. But I think that if people like her received a little more comments like what Nikki was saying.
Maybe she did.
Maybe she did. But also, like, the average person. So you were talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger and how he worked his ass off, and nobody would debate that he did. And there are many people who work their fucking asses off, and they're amazing.
Okay.
There are millions of regular people that cannot figure out how to be the Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I just have compassion for people who are finding it very hard and struggling. And sometimes they're reaching out to look for, like, tell me that there's hope for me, not stop fucking crying. That's all. Like, I just feel like that girl, like, I agreed with you, and, like, everyone's going to tear her to pieces. I think it's a little weird to go online and do that, but maybe she has nobody to talk to. And this was just like, I need to get this out because I'm just so frustrated. And she might look back at this later and feel like an idiot, but she's not 100% wrong. And, like, when you first have to become an adult, it's fucking hard. All of us complain about it sometimes. We just don't do it on the internet.
Did you complain about becoming? I didn't. I don't recall ever complaining about the responsibilities of getting older. Did you? You don't strike me as someone that would or did.
If either of you can tell me that you never wake up and say, I don't want to fucking work today.
That's different. That's different.
I remember having a moment. It was like my, I think it was my first office job and just some random company. I got the job off of like monster.com. I don't even know if that website exists, like a job search website. This is before I started working at the record label. This is before I was in the music industry. I had this useless undergraduate degree, Bachelor of Arts, got me nowhere. And I just needed a job. And I thought, I get office jobs. I guess I got to work in an office. Like, I guess this is just what I have to do. I didn't have any kind of specific professional designation. And I was working this office in Etobicoke, which is just west of Toronto. And I was living downtown Toronto. And I God, I hated that job so much. It was just like this admin job. And I was 24, I think, and everybody else there was, you know, in their 50s and beyond, which at the time felt so old. And I remember I was in the like the staff lunchroom and I had to wear like business casual clothing and I just hated this job so much. It was so unstimulating.
Her leggings have skeletons on them.
And, yeah, I'm wearing skeleton leggings for Halloween. And I had brought my lunch. And it, I think it was like, I think it was couscous. And I put it in the microwave and it exploded. Like the lid flew off. Mm. And it was just this couscous explosion nightmare inside the microwave. And I remember just sitting there cleaning couscous out of this communal microwave in this shared kitchen in this boring office with boring people who all hated their jobs. Mm. And I was this moment of... this can't be my life. Cool. Like this cannot be my life. It was that to me was a TSN turning point. Like I cannot live like this. Mm-hmm. And then it was shortly after that I got the job at the record label, biggest record company in the world. And I was freshly 25 and I was like, I've made it. Like this is it. And that would, after that moment, I was like, for the rest of my life, I'm never going to have a job that I hate. I won't do it. I will not do it.
Yeah. And I hope that I believe that majority of people either accept their circumstances. Like I saw another video of a young woman. She lives, I don't know if it's in Toronto, but she lives in a metropolitan city with her husband, her two children. And they actually, you know what? She's American. I think they're somewhere in California, but she's in a city with her husband, her two children. And they're in a two-bedroom apartment and they had to actually bring in a roommate because with his income, she's a stay-at-home mom with the kids. They couldn't afford this place on their own. It's a very expensive area. Anyway, so she posts videos on how she manages, you know, a family of four plus the roommate in this two-bedroom apartment and how they manage in terms of like food and whatever. Like, I think her intent is to show people that even if you have very little, like you can make the most of it. Oh my God, the way people come at this woman for just, and she's young, like she's not even 30 yet. She's a very, very young woman. And she's just trying to show that like, even if you don't have a lot, like this is how you can actually make the most of what you have and like live your life. And I don't see anything wrong with the content she posts, but oh my God, the way people come after her, like
what?
Like how can you live in a two bedroom apartment and your whole family in one room? I'm like, what is wrong with the world? Like if that's what they can afford and it works for them and they're happy and they're healthy, why the fuck do you care?
That's how it works in other countries.
Right.
Too.
This is what I mean is like the attitude in this country, in the United States, and like, well, it's just so bizarre to me. It's like, on one hand, you tell people not to cry when they can't afford the big house, yet you shit on the people who are making do with the tiny apartment. You know what I mean? Like, what are people supposed to do?
The whole, I can't remember. Other people were posting on my post there, and I was reading some of the stuff. I didn't read it all because, you know.
Posting ghosts.
All the great ones do it.
Thanks, Connor. All the great ones do. I'm attempting to be great. All the great ones do. And someone posted something that was interesting. They were like, well, the whole idea of that the previous generation had to go through this and that's just a rite of passage and maybe it should be looked at, hopefully the previous generation wanted better for you and therefore you don't have to work as hard.
That's what I always say. I'm like, my dad worked hard so I don't have to.
But then the idea of not working hard is weird to me because it's a normal thing that happens. I mean, I'll always go back to this. I saw this artist, David Cho. Is his name David Cho?
Yeah.
And he was talking on Joe Rogan how he went to Africa, some country in Africa, and he hung out with this tribe of people. And these tribe of people, they hunt gorillas because they've been there for generations and they've cleaned out everything that's there. The only thing that's left to eat that's meat are gorillas. So they hunt gorillas. So all of the men wake up way before the crack of dawn and they go hunting all fucking day long. That's their job, is to hunt, to find gorillas, kill gorillas, and bring them back, and so we can all eat. And while that's happening, all the women during the day are doing work, gathering, whatever the rest it is, looking after children, blah, 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 right? And I'm like, this is all work, guys. This is just natural. This is normal. This is what humans do, regardless of what civilization, what population you're in any part of the world. It just so happens to be that you don't have to get up at the crack of dawn to go fucking hunting barefoot all day long to find a fucking gorilla, and hopefully you can kill a gorilla and bring it back home so everyone could fucking eat. You just got to get on a subway at 7:30 in the morning and go sit in your 9 to 5 and get home by 6:30. So everyone's got to do it. It's just the nature of being.
It also gives you purpose,
human,
like,
on this world.
All of us have talents and abilities and skills and whatever, and you are supposed to spend your childhood years, your adolescent years, trying to figure out, like, what am I good at? What do I like? Where can I see myself? Where do I fit? That in itself is daunting. But then when you get out of school and you've got to do the whole adulting thing, hopefully you've figured out at least where you want to start. But it's also never too late to change what you want
Absolutely.
To do. But not having a job, a purpose at some point also is why there's so many people dealing with, and not why, but I mean, it's probably a factor in people dealing with mental health issues, like not having any kind of like thing.
Have you ever heard of these philosophies that in places where there are people, where you are in a civilization, where it is like a hunter-gatherer scenario, there is no depression. You don't have time to be depressed.
I did hear that,
you don't
that,
have
actually.
Time to sit in and be in a mental state because you're in constant survival mode. That's it. You live in survival mode. You're like every other animal. That's all you're doing is trying to find food and shelter and get to the next day. And then procreate to spread your genes.
I guess people in the Western world thought that having all of the luxury and technology that we do, we wouldn't have to live in survival mode. Yet a lot of people are finding themselves constantly in survival mode.
You know, what's interesting is my brothers were... This is ages ago. This is when I was broke before I became a massage therapist, which is why I became a massage therapist. I didn't have enough money to travel, which is my favorite thing in the world. And my brothers went on a trip without me. How dare they? And they went to Africa. And they were, I think they were in the Congo or something. And they met this local tour guide. And he was talking to my brother. And he said, wow, you're from Canada. Like, everybody's rich there. Mm-hmm. And my brother's like, I mean, comparatively, yes. Like, yes, I guess. You know, it is one of the highest quality of living countries in the world. And this tour guide said, wow, everybody must be so happy because you guys are so rich. And my brother is like, wow. He said, you know what? We are so rich, like as a country, and most people are miserable. And this, so like, he didn't get it. This guy, he's just like, what do you mean? And he said to
That's
him, this tour guide said to my brother, you know, he said, you know, we got a lot of poverty here, but we're happy.
Yeah.
You see kids playing in the streets.
Same interview, he was talking to these people in this tribe about life in the US. And they're like, I would never want to live there. I would visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. You guys jump out of buildings. You guys hang yourselves. You guys kill yourselves. We don't do that here. Like, how bad can life be that you want to end it? That type of thing. They're like, I'll visit, but I don't want to be in part of that. It's really interesting to hear.
I was speaking to...
Although I don't know how serious you can take that guy.
Tara Nicole. She was one of the educators at the CMC. We've also had her on the podcast. We've done interviews with her.
She gave a talk, yeah?
She taught classes.
Yeah. And Tara, she goes on missions to Africa. I can't remember the name of the hospital where she does volunteer work, but she goes once a year and does these missions there to help educate, because she's a lactation consultant. She's a doula, so she goes goes and works with the midwives there, and she'll bring like anatomy textbooks and medical supplies and whatever just to help out at this children's hospital. And she always talks to me about the lifestyle when she's there. She's like, there's just so much more human connection, which is, I mean, understandably why people can be happier in these types of places, because she said at the end of the day, everybody doesn't just like go home and like watch Netflix or go on their smartphones or their laptops or their whatever.
There's a lot of isolation here.
Yeah. She said everybody is really connected. There's still like a really strong sense of community. Mm-hmm. Like everybody
takes a village,
gathers around together. Yeah. She said all the, like the men go to work and like all the women actually like hang out together. You're not like alone with your kids in mm-hmm. your house. Mm-hmm. Like imagine how much less postpartum depression and anxiety might exist if you actually felt like you had support and people around you. And she said at the end of the day, people hang out, they play cards together, they play games, they sing. Like it's a very community oriented place. And she's like, everybody's happy. Like they've got a lot more in terms of disease and disability. Like there's a lot of setbacks in like the medical system where she goes to volunteer, but she's like, as a community of people, they're just happier mm-hmm. than we are. They're not stressed all the time.
We're very isolated in the Western world. Like everybody living alone, living in condos, living in tiny boxes, mm-hmm. you know, getting on the subway, putting their headphones on, putting mm-hmm. their head down, not talking. Like I remember there were days when, again, when I was in university and I was living with my parents, and I would wake up. My parents used to travel a lot, so they were gone. I would take the train to Toronto. I would skateboard to class.
How did I know you this long and not know you skateboarded?
I was not good.
We'll circle back to that.
I was not good. But I would sit in class. My classes would have, you know, it was University of Toronto, so 500 people, 1,000 yeah. people, 1,500 yeah. people. And then I would skateboard back to Union Station, hop on the train, go back home. And by the time I got home, I'd be like, wow, I did not talk to a human.
To anybody, yeah.
I didn't talk to a human today. And then you just come home and you throw in a movie and like, that's your day. We're very isolated here. There's another thing that I really like about traveling is you get to see how the rest of the world lives. And I've been to countries that are much poorer than, most countries are poorer than Canada. And I've been to a lot of them. And you see how they live and you see the sense of community and like, mm-hmm. doors are open and windows open and everybody's hanging out in the streets and they're talking to their neighbors and there's live music in the town square and children running around at 11 p.m.
We all take the afternoon off to go home and sleep.
People go home and take naps and it's just, and you know, and the food is good and the wine is good and everything's locally sourced and you go to other countries, life. I'm like, they got it right. Like there's just, and that's one of the most important aspects about our job as not so much you're not massaging, but as massage therapists is giving people that sense of connection. Like I have a small handful of male clients and I've treated some of them that live alone and they're single mm-hmm. and they're straight, which like typically straight men don't, unless they're in a relationship with a woman, they don't get a lot of physical contact because it's just the way that men were socialized. Mm-hmm. And they'll come to me and I give them an hour-long massage once a month. And I'm like,
and that might be the only human touch they've
had. This could very well
be
the only human contact that this guy gets for the month. Like,
it's wild.
I think that human connection part is such an important part of our job.
It is very, very interesting to me how we've become so accustomed, like you were saying, to just being isolated and not talking to anybody all day. So I volunteered on my kids' class trip 2 days ago, and I was one of three parents sitting at the back of the school bus on the way to the Toronto Botanical Gardens. And so the two other moms were there and I didn't know them. I'd never met them before. One of them looked vaguely familiar from like the drop-off spot. Mm. So I'm just that type of person. Like I introduced myself to them, let them know which kid was mine. And they sort of reluctantly did the same. They spent the entire ride, even though sitting next to each other with their phones in their faces and never spoke. And I was like, this is so bizarre to me. Like we're all sitting here. Like there was a couple of things, like anytime we spoke, it was always initiated by me before I realized like, okay, well, they obviously just want to like scroll on their phone. So I just kind of sat there. I refused to take out my phone. It's like, this is crazy.
Damn,
like we're sitting together and it's people I don't really know. The only thing we have in common is we have children the same age that go to the same school and we're going on this trip, but like no desire to actually have any kind of conversation. I was like, okay, that's fine. So I just kind of sat there and watched the Toronto traffic pass by. So we were trying to get to the gardens. It's so, so crazy how isolated we are.
Maybe we should open the anti-isolation clinic.
This sounds like we might not be following along with proper standards of practice.
Where you market to the person who just doesn't have a lot of things going on and doesn't have that connection with other people.
Oh my God, you know what I was picturing when you said that? Like a communal room where everybody just has their massage in the same room.
No.
I was like, that might not be allowed.
That's not what I meant. That communal room will have a pool table and a big screen television and everything else where you can come and hang out before you get your massage for that one person that's going to touch you for that month.
Well, I was saying to Mark off mic before we started recording that, like,
we'll call it the Lonely Guy Club.
Who's going to want to join that club?
The Lonely Guys. The Lonely Guys would.
That could be a dangerous. That sounds like a group of incels. I don't know.
I would go to the Lonely Guy.
All the women are running the other direction, by the way.
That's okay.
I was having this conversation with a colleague yesterday that massage can be, on the one hand, I think it's very important that we're giving people that human touch and that human contact that maybe they're not receiving in their personal lives.
Yep.
And also being a massage therapist can be very isolating. Like, I've had conversations with so many people who are like, man, my treatment room doesn't have any windows. Like, I'm working in the dark all day and it's really getting to me, especially in the winter. And like, I work from home and I do a lot of that sort of like zone out relaxation. Like, there's typically, I have some clients who talk a lot, but they're few and far between. Most of my clients just come in, zone out. They're there because they're stressed or they have chronic pain and they just want to shut down, turn off their phone, ignore the outside world, and just not have to talk to anybody. And I'm honored to give them that. But I'll go the entire day where like the only talking is like the 5 minutes of the intake interview. And then when I cash them out at the end,
right.
And then it's just me in that room alone with my thoughts, like listening to music and writing blog posts in my head. And it can get
so
lonely.
When your lonely day is over, what does the rest of your day look like?
So I'm lucky. I live with my brother, kind of. So it's,
the house is split into apartments.
Yeah, we share a house with separate units. So right. I get the best of both worlds. I get all the perks of living alone and all the perks of having a roommate with none of the drawbacks of either. So last night I went upstairs, which my brother lives above me, and we watched John Oliver.
Do you got to text him, say like, hey man, I'm coming over
sometimes?
Yeah.
So like usually I'll just text him and I'll say TV, or like if we're watching, we watch a lot of like true crime shows. So he'll just text me and go murder, which means I want to watch shows about murder. So yeah, if you look at our text messages, it's just TV,
murder. TV and murder.
Yeah, or he'll text me, he'll go gummies, like he just wants gummy candy, like he wants me to bring him candy, or like, it's all like these one word.
That's hilarious.
She does hate texting, so the one word makes sense.
Yeah.
When you texted me today, I was like, who is
well,
this?
Well, because I know, Did I was Nikki like, I think Amanda likes texting, so I'm going to text her. And or some days I just waltz upstairs, like I'll walk on up with just no announcement and just see if he's, I just open the door and I just yell like, are you decent, like are you fully clothed, and then if he says yes, I walk on up.
Is this something that you're mindful of, like, oh, my days can be kind of lonely and isolating and therefore I'm going to schedule a whole bunch of social things, is that are you mindful of that, or that
yeah, sometimes yeah. So I was having this conversation yesterday with a colleague who she said, you know, like self-employment can be isolating because you're just with this one person show.
Yeah.
And then self-employment in an industry like ours can be especially isolating when, you know, you're seeing one person at a time. They're probably maybe not talking all that much. You're in the same room for the whole day. Like, it can be kind of monotonous, repetitive. It can be really isolating. She was like, does anybody else feel like this? Like, how do you deal with it? And I was like, oh my gosh, absolutely, all the time. Like, I totally get my moments of loneliness, but I try to go out of my way to have a very active social life. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very fortunate that I have, like, I've been living in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, since I was one. Mm. So I built a network. I've had lifelong friends. I'm very close with my cousins. A lot of them live in the GTA. I go to a ton of concerts. Like there's always something on, like I always have something on the calendar. It's always somebody's birthday or there's a concert or there's, you know, I have friends in bands and I go see them and mm-hmm. it's always somebody's birthday.
By the way, we scheduled this podcast recording more than 1 month ago because she does have a very active social calendar.
I try to keep busy and make those connections, but I'm also in the very fortunate position that like I'm childless. So it's not like the end of the day and I have to devote my entire life to my kids. Like mm-hmm. I don't have kids. I don't have dependents. Like my mom is perfectly functioning and lives on her own and like we hang out, but I don't have to take care of her. Like there's nobody in my life that I have to take care of. I'm not responsible for anybody.
Is she super social, your mom?
My mom is crazy social. Yeah. My mom is busier than I am, honestly. She's retired, but every time I'll call her and she'll be like, oh, I gotta go. Like I'm going to choir and then I've got this painting class and then I've got my bridge club at 4 and then I'm meeting, you know, and then I'm watching the grandkids and then I'm like, she's a cruiser. So she goes on cruises all the time. Like she's classic old lady.
Love that.
Yeah. So she's traveling. Like I can't keep track of where she is in the world. And yeah, she's a social butterfly.
I wish my mom was social.
I love it. I love it. I'm so grateful for her.
Your mom used to be social. I think she's slowed down because she likes a more relaxed pace right now. But now that she's living alone, I can see why you'd want her to be social again.
She talks to nobody.
Yeah. I mean, well, she talks to me.
Well, 6 of the 7 days of the week, she probably says 0 words most of the time.
Yeah, that was like when Mark drove down to the Black Massage Therapist Conference, although he doesn't mind driving.
Where was it?
It was in Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's a hike.
So it's 12-hour drive. Yeah. So I talked to him here and there. Like he'd call me from the car, but I was also taking care of the kids and working. Like I couldn't talk to him the whole time. And he said to me one time, I can't remember what number of hours he said, but he's like, I just realized I haven't like spoken. Like I haven't opened my mouth. It was something like 6 hours. Like I haven't talked to anybody because he was just by himself in a car. And like, yeah, I guess that's a weird feeling. Like I always have little children around me, so I'm always talking to somebody. Plus I talk to strangers at the grocery store. So
oh, you're one of those?
Oh, I'm so annoying. You know, I will talk to everybody.
So Danielle, my massage therapist, who you guys have had in the podcast, and she gave a talk at the conference.
Ah, shit. She texts me today.
She always makes fun of me because like I'll tell her like I go to the gym and I'm social at the gym. Like I'm friends with my trainer. I'm not friends in the sense that like we don't hang out outside of work, but like we chat and we're cool. And
would you hang out with him outside of work? Him or her?
He's him. He's the kind of, I was telling him today, I was like, he's the kind of guy that I would hang out with.
Kind of guy?
He's funny.
Yeah.
That was when I first hired him. That one was like when we had our introductory call. I told him, I was like, I'm looking for somebody funny. Like, yes, I want to get results and I want to get stronger and I have physical goals that I'm working towards.
But don't make me hate my workout.
But I was like, I'm going to spend hours every week with you at 7 in the morning. We got to have a good time. I was like, I want you to be funny. And he is. He's the type of guy that I would like hang out with, but we don't hang out. I don't cross that boundary. And, you know, he's got his own life, but I don't know where I was going with that.
Danielle.
Oh, Danielle, yeah. She was making fun of me.
Wait. Why wouldn't you cross that boundary with a personal trainer?
I don't know. I'm his client, you know? I don't know. I don't hang out with my
clients. If he was your hairdresser, would you feel the same way?
Maybe. I mean, my hairdresser, I cut my hair like once a year. So... Okay. But like I see him twice a week. I don't know. But Danielle was mocking me because I was saying to her, like, I do like yoga and I do spin class. Yeah. And so I take a lot of classes and I go and I do these training sessions. And I was like, yeah, I'll go and I'll sit in the spin class and whoever's on the bike next to me, I'll introduce myself. And she's like, you do what? And I was like, yeah, I'll just be like, I'm going to sit here and suffer for the next hour. Like, yeah, I'm like, hey, I'm Nikki. And she's like, oh my God, I would never. I'm like, why not?
I don't see a problem with it. But
yeah,
again,
but I wouldn't, but I need people like you because I'm happy for when that happens. I just wouldn't make it happen.
That's the other thing too, is like, you never know how many people out there are just, they want that connection, but they're too afraid to reach out. Yeah. And like worst case scenario, they're a loner and they're like, don't talk to me. Yeah. I'm
well,
like,
that's
okay,
the thing.
Cool.
You can read that very quickly. Like I said, with these other two mothers, nothing against them. They're just probably not the social people that want to have a conversation with a strange woman on a bus. That's fine. I won't talk to you, but I will always be the person to initiate a conversation. If I'm going to be sitting or beside someone, or I'm going to be around someone for any length of time, I'll try to find some commonality, some connection. Doesn't mean we have to be BFFs. We'll probably never speak to each other again. We'll probably never see each other again, but I will talk to almost everyone anywhere I go.
I took a flight once to the first time I went to London, England. I took a flight and it's, you know, it's a good, whatever, 7 hours or something. Mm. And sitting next to this guy, and I was alone and he was alone, and hey, I'm Nikki. And he was like, oh, he was taken aback. It's like, oh, hi. And I was like, okay. And we started chatting, what do you do for work, blah blah blah. We ended up talking like the whole flight, and he was cool. And he was like, wow, I travel for work. Like, I forget what his job was, but he did some kind of job where he's just constantly traveling. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm on planes all the time and I've never had a conversation on a plane. I was like, I'm sorry, what? I always introduce myself to the, like, I'm going to sit with you in a cramped space for the next 8, 10, 15 hours. Like, I just think.
At least you,
like,
can know if, my name.
If you want to put your, because sometimes I say my name and they say theirs and then they put their headphones in or they open their book and I'm like, okay, message received. But I always introduce myself and he's like, oh, I've never done this. And I just remember thinking, what a missed opportunity, like, especially on a plane, because the person you're sitting next
to. There's nowhere to go. Well,
no. They have nowhere to go. And you're trapped. You're stuck with them. But also,
fuck.
Like, by definition, the person on a plane, like, they're going from one country to another country, and you don't know where they're from. Hmm. You don't know where they live. You don't know where they just came from.
Yep.
You don't, like, to me, it's so exciting to
I've
be
met
like,
some of the most
oh my gosh, what country are you going to and why? And like, because, like, maybe he was just going to a layover at Heathrow and he was on his way to somewhere more fascinating. Like, it's just such a golden opportunity. You can learn so much. I've met people and I've talked about their companies and their kids and their, like, I've had some of the most interesting conversations on planes.
Do you ever get the vibe that someone is just bullshitting you the whole time?
Oh.
Have you ever sat down and had a conversation? At the end of it, you're like, that guy just fucking, that chick just lied their fucking ass off to me about it.
I guess that is always possible, but that would never,
I was gonna say, never cross my mind.
Because I would be the guy that would be like, hi, yeah.
Just make shit up.
My name is Jason. Yeah. I run a tech company in Waterloo. I would just totally make the whole thing up.
Are you like low key a sociopath? Like, just, why would you do that?
Just for shits and giggles.
But then I think you have to answer follow up questions.
But that's okay because I'm making shit up as I go along, right? That would be kind of fun.
That is so funny. I would never think to do that. I did tell Mark, I don't know if you remember
maybe.
You should practice it.
No, I can't.
You should practice it. Why not?
I am the worst liar on the face of the earth.
No one's saying you're lying. Just practice it.
The reason that I don't tell lies is exactly that. Well, one, because it doesn't make me feel good. Like, I literally have like a burning inside of me.
I'm allergic to lying.
I just have to tell you the truth.
That's not lying what I just did. Practice it.
No, it is lying.
It is lying.
Is it lying?
Yes. What is the opposite of telling the truth, Mark?
That's not lying. What I just did.
It's not lying in a way that causes direct harm.
It might not be harmful lying. It's still lying.
It's meaningless.
Like, if our child just made up a story to you, you would say to her, well, that's not true. You're lying.
Or I'd leave her be, knowing very well she's making up a story and she knows she's making up a story. So let's just roll with the story.
Oh, I've heard you call her out for lying before. Our little
that's
one
different.
Loves to.
When she lies
she
about
loves
something
to
that's
tell
different.
Now I'm realizing where she's getting it from. She loves to tell
it's
ridiculous stories.
It's
like, she
fun.
Just makes something up.
It's,
and like,
it's
never
fun.
It's never harmful to be like, my teacher let us have chocolate cake at recess. I'm like, really? Your teacher gave you chocolate cake at recess. Yep. Mm-hmm. And like,
I'd be like, I know the public school budget. There's no chocolate cake.
And she like sticks to her guns until I'm like, and then Mark will say to her, so if I call your teacher right now and say I didn't approve of my kid having chocolate cake, she's going to say that you had chocolate cake. And then suddenly, okay, there was no chocolate cake.
I was watching a Lex Fridman podcast, and he had on some guy that was a former CIA agent. And they were talking about going undercover, and he was giving all the tips.
Is that guy allowed to talk about that?
I don't think he's saying anything that you probably can't look up. Do you know what I mean? And he was
talking. That guy's got stories.
He was talking about like how to effectively go undercover and just become a different person. And he's like, most of the times when you just say something, someone will believe you. Like, why would they think not? Like, if you said, hey, what's your name? I say, my name's Jason. Like, why would you not believe me?
Well, exactly.
Right? Why would you not believe me?
Why would you and not? That's, just, now it, you've got me rethinking and I'm just, every interaction I've ever had.
Everyone's ever told you. Like,
they could have just made that up. 100%. And I'm like, okay, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. You just say it. The person that can easily go undercover is the person that just fits right the fuck in. And he was saying, like, you know who fits in the most? A brown guy with a beard. He's like, no one ever will question a brown guy with a beard. It's like, you won't look at the brown guy with a beard and think, spy. You'll just think, brown guy with a beard. Huh. It was really interesting. I was like,
oh. Was this CIA agent brown?
Was he brown
guy
with a beard?
Was he talking about? Or he was just saying that that's the best.
Yes, he's a brown guy. But he's like, yeah, that's the easiest thing. And then he was talking about the three different levels of like going undercover. And I can't remember what they are, but they were really fucking interesting. Like, one where you completely change your identity, and that's when you're fucked. You're fucked. If someone finds you with a prosthetic, you're fucked. Because, like, why do you have a fake nose? Do you know what I mean? And then the others are, that's the highest level. The middle level is you physically change your appearance, right? So you'll either gain, like, 15 pounds because you look really different. You'll lose 20 pounds. You'll shave your head. You'll grow a beard. You look physically different. And the other one, I can't remember what the lowest level is, but anyway, it was a super interesting episode. If you ever get a chance.
It's wild.
I was talking about dream jobs with my brother recently, and he said, is Lex Friedman, is that the guy's name? Podcast host, interviewer guy? Yeah, yep. My brother said him. He's like, I want him. I said Andy Richter, who was Conan O'Brien's sidekick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That has always been my dream job.
Your brother's dream job was to...
My brother's dream job was Lex, to be like a podcast host interviewing the world's most interesting people.
He does. He's like a professor at MIT.
Oh, no. His dream job was just the podcast part.
Oh, okay.
He just wants to interview interesting people on podcasts. Right. My dream job was being the sidekick on a late night talk show.
Specifically to Conan O'Brien, though?
Conan specifically in the 90s. So, because I'm obsessed with the 90s. And so, because I used to watch Conan in the 90s.
In the year 2000?
He had the pumpkins. In the year 2000. Beastie Boys will become Beastie Men when they go through Beastie puberty.
He's such a funny guy.
I was listening to his podcast on the way here because Conan has a podcast now. And he just interviewed Dave Grohl, my favorite person. Chris Novoselic, the bassist of Nirvana, and Steve Albini, the producer who produced Nirvana's In Utero, which just turned 30.
Yeah.
And so I was listening to that interview on the way here. So my dream job is Conan's sidekick. Because you don't have to do all the work of being Conan. You don't have to be on all the time. Like, not much is expected from you.
Right.
But you get to, like, sit next to him, have all the fun, meet all the people.
And sometimes throw in something.
And, like, occasionally just say something kind of funny.
Didn't he go to Harvard, Conan?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, he's very smart.
So he used to be a writer on The Simpsons, too?
Simpsons and SNL.
Live. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. He wrote the monorail episode of The Simpsons.
I remember that. Monorail. I remember that episode. Right. Now you've got me thinking about my dream job. I want to know,
it's
Mark,
massage.
What's your dream job?
I don't think I have a dream job.
What would you want to get up and do every day if you could?
My dream is to do nothing. Like, that's when I know I've made it. When I can wake up and just do anything I fucking please, and it doesn't matter to anybody else but me, and I'm not responsible for absolutely anything. That is my goal in life, is to be able to wake up and just do whatever the hell I want.
That's fair.
It's boring. It's boring as hell.
I won't judge that, but I think you'd be surprised. They have done all kinds of studies on happiness, and people in general, are so bad at predicting our own happiness.
I'm not saying I want to do nothing.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't want to be responsible for anything, and therefore I can just do anything I want.
Yeah.
Right? So if I want to wake up and play the bass for the majority of the day, cool.
I think you'd be surprised at how quickly that gets old.
So
because they've done studies that say, like, when people retire, or when people, like, you build a company and you work your ass off to build this company and then you sell it, that the moment that you sell it, which is supposed to be when you get millions of dollars and you've made it and you're supposed to be, like, the happiest you've ever been, high rates of depression, people have no purpose.
I believe that.
Or people who retire.
But I don't attach the stuff that I do to purpose. Like, doing all this stuff is fun, and it's a way to make a living, and I get to do what I want, which is cool. But then I also feel like
his dream job.
But I'm almost there. But I also feel like I got deadlines and blah 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 and blah blah blah. If you remove all of that responsibility stuff, then I would just have a bunch of hobbies. And one of the hobbies would probably be making podcasts. One of the hobbies would probably be doing videography nonsense.
So
one of the hobbies,
aside from hobbies then, Mark, yes, if you had to take one of these things and say, this is how I want to make a living. Like what you're saying is you essentially don't want responsibility,
right,
but knowing that like the lady crying on the internet,
yes,
you have to make money.
Cool.
What would be your dream way of making money?
My dream way of making money would be to be a traveling musician in a band, and I'm nobody. I'm just a player on stage.
Yeah.
I play bass for Mariah Carey.
That's right. True. You've talked about that so often, about those musicians and how like they're living. Because like they're the assistant, right? They're sitting next to Conan, and they just have to go up there and play.
You get to go along for the ride, but you don't have to do all the hard work.
Yeah. I still get to enjoy it.
And you can walk down the street without people recognizing you.
Nobody knows who the fuck you are. Yeah. You just do that thing. It's really cool. I don't want to be in a spotlight. I don't want this. I don't necessarily care if I write songs or whatever the case. I'm happy to play a bass line that someone says, hey, we need it to sound like this. Make it up and make that happen. I'm like, cool, let me do that. And I can do this every night.
You're like the session guy on tour.
Yes.
That would be
session
would
musician
be
is definitely your dream job, because we've talked about this more than once. And I think that would be the happy, I mean, you'd still have responsibility to an extent. But
right,
it wouldn't be like daily deadlines and this and that. And yeah, you
know, it's still work.
It's still work.
You still got to go to rehearsal. You still got to go to sound check. You still got to travel and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if that was, I wouldn't mind doing this, like your brother. Like, I wouldn't mind just sitting around talking to people and not having to fucking do the editing and the marketing behind it. You know what I mean? That's the work part of it. This part is not the work part. So I think one of those types of things I think I'd enjoy a lot. But
I know what I'd want to do.
But I don't really want to do anything. I don't want to do any of it.
If it could pay all my bills, I'd want to be a lifestyle blogger. I would want to sit by myself. It's funny enough, the person
really?
Who likes to talk to everybody, I'd want to sit behind a screen with coffee and spew my wisdom to the world in written form.
Huh.
A friend of ours had a really cool idea.
It was so cool.
With a website. And even the name of the fucking website was cool.
It was so good.
And I'm like, if you don't do something with this, like, I'm going to fucking take this idea off.
I literally thought about stealing it too, but somebody else actually owns the domain name.
Okay,
that she
but,
had. But yeah,
you can easily spin something off of that.
Yeah.
And she was pretty much running a lifestyle blog where she had people that would, you know, travel the world and write about it.
So there was a travel section. There was health and wellness and fitness and food and,
I mean,
like,
there's a lot
relationships,
of
family, everything.
There's a lot of these
platforms.
I was
like, that's what
I
would want to do.
If you do it well, you can make a living at it.
Yeah.
And she had such a great idea, and she went nowhere with it. I'm like,
I mean,
She went nowhere with it for the same reason that I've never actually jumped on this idea, because I've expressed this to Mark many times.
Do it.
Like, I would love to like be a blogger and write and do all this stuff.
I just want
to
be your chauffeur.
I have a ton of really good ideas that live in here, but it takes time to actually sit and get them out in a way that is palpable for the world.
Well, this is what, when people say, what do you think about when you're massaging? Like, when people are just passed out on the table, what do you think about? I'm like,
I write blogs in my head constantly, like constantly. And there was a time where Mark used to ask me to-
So why are you producing a bunch of blogs constantly?
Don't look at me. I have a blog.
For the same reason that our friend didn't continue, because she realized being a full-time mom to younger children, now her kids are a little older, but her kids were about the age of my children now, she didn't have the time to put the work into it. So it was like, you can't be this inconsistent lifestyle blogger where you put out something and then 6 weeks later you publish something, because you don't have the time in a day. So where I am right now, between podcasting and conferences and all of this other stuff,
all over the place,
I don't have the time to produce the quality of, like, you would never produce something half-assed.
I understand.
And I would not produce something
half-assed. It's so hard for me to hear this kind of stuff, because when so many people have so many fucking cool ideas, and the barrier in the way is the amount
regular
of
life.
Well, yes, but the amount of work that needs to come down to it, and feeling like you can't do it as part of your regular life. You can. It's just going to fucking suck for a while.
Yeah.
But it'll suck for fucking 3 to 5 years. And after that, you're going to be in where you want to be. It's like, you can work at it part-time for the next 8 years, and it'll never come to be. Or you can just say, fuck it, I'm going to make the next 2 or 3 years complete bullshit for me. but in fucking 5 years, I'm going to be right where I want to fucking be.
That's what I did 100%. That's what I did with massage, like with my private practice. Like when you see in all these like Facebook groups, you know, there are all these people who say, like, don't do Groupon, don't offer discounts, don't, you know your worth. If you offer a discount, you're going to attract tire kickers and all. And like, I've never run a Groupon. I have no desire to run a Groupon. It's not my thing, but I know some people who've made it work.
Right.
You got a flash flood of client. And like, I'll tell people, like, building my practice, like that first year, I gave dozens, if not hundreds, of free or very heavily discounted massages to get the traction going, to get those reviews, to build, put my name out there.
Started at the bottom rung.
100%. To get to where I was. Like, it's like you say, I'm like, I ate shit.
Yeah.
I ate shit for a good year or two in my private practice.
It's the only way to do it. Like when we started with Massage Therapy Media, Mark joked about this last night on the podcast, but this is actually how it happened. When he had this idea, I saw the vision. I was like on board with like, this is a great idea. I told him right away. I'm like, I am not prepared for the amount of fucking work this is. Like I have to mentally prepare myself for the amount of work we're jumping into. And I still am at the point where I'm like, holy fuck, this is still so much work. But the only way this was going to go anywhere is if we put so, like, I'm talking, there was nights we were here until like 3 a.m. I mean, he still has to pull some of those nights. One of us has to go home and take care of the kids, but it's so much work. But the whole point of like throwing everything into this is so that in 5 years, we're not eating shit anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's when we talk, you know, when I say like my dream is to do a lifestyle blog, it's not that I'm saying I never will. I haven't thrown that out the window. It's not that I'm saying I will never start a blog or whatever. I also don't feel like I'm in a huge rush because I'm looking at the projects we're doing together as like, I don't want to split my time so many more ways. I'm going to focus on this. Once this gets going, hopefully he doesn't come at me with something else and I can like focus on something else.
Sometimes these massage therapists, I just want to grab him and shake him and be like, you're more than capable. Just you've probably gone through worse. You've probably eaten shit many fucking times in your life and you come out on the other end. And you were doing that just for the sake of survival. Well, now do it for the sake of being able to get the life that you fucking really want. Can you fucking do that for me? Not for me, but for you. Do you know what I mean? I fucking, so many people, like there's someone that I think posted in a Facebook group. I just had a conversation with her. She did. You made the comment that, wait, didn't you do this? Didn't you see my business coach kind of thing?
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I just want to be like, just go for it. Please just put your face down and put in the crazy amount of work it's going to be. There's no work-life balance for a little bit of time. And at the end, you're going to be so fucking happy.
I mean, yeah. I mean, most, I know who you're talking about. I had a private conversation with them and they're lovely.
Yes.
And I won't speak to that person's particular situation. Right. But in general, I think most people, for whatever reason,
don't want to do the work.
They don't really want what they think they want. Like, they don't really, really want it. Like, I've had so many people come, and I will admit, like, I have been given privileges in my life.
Right.
Just my,
sure.
I'm able-bodied and
yes.
grew up in a good home and Canadian and English-speaking and white enough and
yes.
all, you know. So I'm not denying that. And I work my ass off to get where I am. And I've had hundreds, if not thousands of people at this point, just through the internet, come up to me and be like, oh, I'd do anything to have half as much success as you, or I'd give anything to get where you are, or, you know, how do I do what you do? And I'll tell them, this is what I did. This is how much I spent.
Yeah.
This is how much I invested. This is how long it took me
yeah.
to build my practice. This is the shit I went through.
Mm-hmm.
These are the hard conversations I had to have. And I'll tell them, and they're just like, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. I'm like, okay, here's the blueprint. And they won't do it. And it's the same with fitness. I've had people come up to me and because I work out a lot, and I've had people say like, how do I get arms like yours? Or, you know, like, wow, you're so healthy. Or I wish I could do XYZ.
Yeah, you can.
And I'm like, here's
you just don't want to do
it.
Here's
my workout routine. Like, here's my schedule at the gym. I spend $1,000 a month at my gym. I've hired professionals. I've done nutritional and fitness coaching programs, and I have a personal trainer. And like, this is my wake up at 6 a.m. every day to go to the gym. Like, I'll tell them this is my schedule. And then they'll sit there with their bag of Doritos and be like, oh, I wish I had your arms. I'm like, I earned these arms.
You don't want to do the thing.
There's people who definitely, they don't want it enough. That's very obvious. Like when it comes to fitness, for example, I constantly say, because I've got a whole group of friends who are in a similar scenario as I am, meaning like we all had children around the same time. And there's a lot of complaining of not having the body they want. And I never complain about that. I never complain about my weight. I never complain about the fact that I'm not as strong as I was. I never complain about any of it. Not because I'm even 100% happy where I am physically, but I also know I've put in zero effort to be where I want to be. How the fuck am I going to complain and not do a damn thing about it? So my message to all of them always is, there is a way. I just don't want to do it. And it sounds like you don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I could get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We have a gym in our condo. But I could get up at 6 o'clock every day.
You'd rather be in bed.
And I can work because I don't have to get out of bed and start getting the kids ready for school until about 7:15, 7:30. I could go to the gym at 6, 100%. I stay in bed until 7:30. That's a choice I'm making. I could get up at 6.
Yeah. So my mantra that I say to myself when my alarm goes off and it's cold and it's dark and I'm snuggling with my cat and I don't feel like getting out of bed, especially to go to the gym, because I don't actually like working out. I do it every day. I don't enjoy it. It's not the highlight of my day. I do it because it's important to me. And
do you feel good though after?
Yeah, always. I feel guilty if I don't do it.
Do you feel good during?
I like weightlifting. Mm-hmm. Like I've recently benched 100 pounds, which was my first, like that was my one rep max, my new personal best.
That's where the arms come from, ladies and gentlemen.
My new record. I like reaching those records, like being like, oh, like when I first deadlifted more than my body weight, that was really exciting. Mm-hmm. So I like the achievement part of it. But getting out of bed, especially if it's like February, it's pitch dark, there's snow. Like I remember when we had, what was that storm called? It was like a bomb cyclone or something they called it.
We had Snowmageddon.
A crazy storm. Yeah, one of the Snowmageddon storms. And I went to the gym and I'm not better than anybody else.
You have a mantra.
Yeah, so my mantra to get out of bed, to actually get my ass to the gym is choose discomfort. It's like you said, it's a choice. Yep. I could choose to push snooze and stay in bed. Mm-hmm. It would be so much easier and so much nicer. And then I'm going to suffer the rest of the day. I'm not going to feel good. I'm going to feel guilty. I'm going to beat myself up. Like I know myself. My mantra is just choose discomfort. Like this, make this choice. Mm-hmm. You have a choice right now.
You always have a choice. And sometimes the choice fucking sucks. And that's like the thing.
Yeah, I hate it.
That I was talking about, you know, with the young girl and expectations. There's always a choice in something. You know, you guys are talking about people who don't want it. I think the other problem with people who start something and then they fall off right away, you mentioned work-life balance. There's this very strange mismatch when it comes to people's expectations of how long things take or how much work has to be put in. We have met with, I don't know how many people who set off on this entrepreneurial journey to do something really fucking cool. And then after a few months, we notice they've fallen off. Well, what happened? Oh, we didn't get the response we want. Like, so you quit? Like, what? No successful business was successful the first week that they opened up. What? And it's just this expectation that I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to open my doors and customers are going to come flying in rather than. And so I don't know, maybe that does go back to they don't want it enough or, well, I don't know.
There's a lot of things that I don't want enough. So for example, when you go through your choose discomfort, what you're doing is you're shifting your comfort zone, right? Your subconscious mind lives in a comfort zone. Amanda's comfort zone right now is I'm going to be in bed until whatever time it is. And then her subconscious mind keeps her there, won't allow her to get up at 6 o'clock, blah, 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 blah. You're using this affirmation to help shift your comfort zone to make this is your new comfort zone is I choose discomfort, right? And that way, when you don't choose this thing, when you don't sit in this comfort zone and you stay in bed, you don't feel good. You don't feel like you. Yeah. See what I'm saying? So you've successfully managed to shift your comfort zone in a way where it leans into the thing that you want.
I mean, it's still uncomfortable. I just,
right.
I'm like, oh, I'm going to go.
But nonetheless.
But you know you're going to feel worse if you don't
exactly.
go. And that's the thing is you've now.
It's a trade-off.
You've now shifted
it's
your
gonna
mindset.
It's going to suck now or it's going to suck later. Exactly. I'd rather it suck now and then I can, like, so either I get out of bed, it's cold, it's dark. I'm miserable. I go to the gym. I lift heavy things. I do hard things. It's uncomfortable. You know, by the time I get home, like the round trip is, you know, say hour and a half and it sucks. And then I've won the rest of the day.
That's or part of your behavior.
Sleep
now.
In, which yes. feels great, and then right? feel like crap for the rest
so
of the
day. So
that's
part of your behavior. You have this something called your creative subconscious, and your creative subconscious does nothing more than makes you act like you in your comfort zone. And it creates the scenario where you're very uncomfortable outside of the comfort zone. So it's very easy to act like you all the time, which is this is the new you. This is the
this
I
is,
do.
Yeah, this is
what
now.
You do. This is your behavior.
If you don't
this
go to the
habit.
Gym, you're like you said, you'll feel uncomfortable, not just in a moment. That's the rest of the day. Yeah. And you'll be beating yourself up about it. You'll be feeling off. Like it you've now shifted your entire mindset right. to I'm the person that gets up at 6 a.m.
Yeah,
and goes
like
to the gym.
And then what'll happen yeah. is the next morning, if you didn't go to the gym, then you'll probably wake up a little earlier and you'll probably go and you'll probably work a little harder because your subconscious mind is now trying to overcompensate for what happened the day before to bring you back to this spot. It's really cool. Work-life balance always fucks me up because I don't look at work-life balance in a single moment. I look at work-life balance over the span of this amount of time.
It has to be. There's no such thing as a single... It's the same thing as balance in relationships. There's no such thing as a 50-50 relationship, whether it's
but
a friendship or romantic.
I don't even mean the percentages. When I take a look at work-life balance, it's not like, okay, well, do I feel like I'm well-balanced today in what I did?
Right.
I'm like, no. Do I feel over this 20-year span that I feel well-balanced? And that might have been these 5 years were garbage to make these other 15 fucking glorious.
Yeah.
That to me is a balance I'll trade off, no problem.
It's not even
so
just
I'm not
that.
Looking at the immediate balance. I'm looking at the balance over the whole span.
That's what I tell people.
Yeah. And then it's not
business 50, is a long game.
Yeah, it's not a 50-50. Like, why does it have to be 50-50? It's not a fucking teeter-totter.
Yeah,
do you
people
know
make
mean?
It very literal. Like, balance has to be 50-50. Yeah. But it's not even, it's
equal.
Not even just like
you can balance something
looking,
that's unequal. It just takes more effort. It takes more willpower. It takes more muscular strength when you're working in this first class lever. When I forget, I just went all physics on you guys, right? When you're working in that
we understand
when
physics.
There you go. When you're working in this first class lever, and you got to exert more muscular force because the moment arm is short on the side. There was this obstacle. So in other words, it's harder to do that thing when it's not that 50-50. But at the end of the day, it's still balanced. I balanced it out because I put in more work.
This is why certain practices, as cheesy as it sounds, like gratitude, really works. So I have a private Instagram account, which nobody has access to if they're
oh,
not
really?
My personal friend. If they're not my personal friend, they do. It's,
am
I mean,
I on it?
It's all the same things that are on my personal Facebook, which you're on. So
okay.
if you probably
yes,
are on my personal
some version of it.
Yeah. So I have personal accounts that what I end up doing is posting a lot of moments with my family, right? Or like my friends, like things that I do that have nothing to do with work. And I let somebody know a while back, I said, my Facebook and my Instagram are not for anybody else, by the way. This is like lazy mom's way of keeping track of what I thought were memorable moments that I
aww.
Don't want to forget.
It's
because
like your
now,
personal photo album.
Exactly. It's my digital photo album where everything is dated. There's a caption of what happened that day. There's like a mood and a feeling that goes along with it that I can remember. And sometimes I will go back and scroll through like my personal Instagram and there's things that I guarantee you I would have forgotten because I look at it. I'm like, oh yeah, because it was like a ridiculous like, you know, spontaneously we went for a walk to the library. I just brought that up because we did that last month. Like the kids and I were sitting at home. It was a beautiful day. And I was like, guys, why are we sitting inside? Like it was just a really, really nice day. And we had no agenda, no plans. And I said, let's go for a walk. And surprisingly, my two young children were like, yeah, let's go for a walk. So we just start walking in our neighborhood. And then I remembered there's this like cute little forested area with a path that's not too far away. I was like, do you guys want to go walk on the path? Yeah, sure. So we walk through there. We come out the other side. Oh, there's the public library. I realize your library card has expired. You've never had one because you were a COVID child. So I was like, let's go and get library cards. And then we went to the library. They took out books. Anyway, it was just a random spontaneous day where nothing happened, right? We went for a walk and we went to the library. Literally, and then we went to Chipotle and ate
that's
guacamole.
That's exciting.
Like, we had no real exciting day, and that's not typically something you would document, right? Like, nothing happened, but it's those things that I'll, like, post on my personal Facebook and Instagram because I want to remember them. And then when I go back and I'm looking at them, that's what makes me realize, like, I don't only work. I don't only, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, there's so many moments that people let those go. You know, you focus on all the negative shit and, like, oh, all I do is work and go home and work and go home. I mean, I work and go home, but when I'm home, I do a lot of fun shit. You're both just staring at me like, what are you talking about?
I think that's sweet.
Negative goal setting. That's what that broad did. I shouldn't say broad like that, but that's what that broad did on that TikTok or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's negative goal
like
setting.
Like I said, I'm
broad.
He yeah. did.
I'm old school, man.
I'm taking a bathroom break like, on yeah, that
I
note.
I haven't heard that for a while.
I'm old school like that. You're broad, you're dame. You're a dame. Suddenly I'm Paul Anka.
Is he still alive?
I think Paul Anka's still alive. And he was talking about writing My Way for Frank Sinatra.
Really? He wrote My Way?
Oh, yeah.
So that guy doesn't have to work ever again if he doesn't
want
to.
Paul Anka's wrote so much shit. And it was when Frank Sinatra was looking to just get out of music. He calls up Paul Anka. He's like, I want you to write me a song. I want to get out of music. He's like, why do you want to get out of music? He's like, I got nothing but fucking holes in my hotel room from FBI bugging me and blah, 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 because of his affiliation with the mob. And so he's just like, you've seen The Godfather.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Fontaine is based on,
right.
On Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he's like, I'm just sick of all of this. Like, I want to get out of music. Write me a song. And he wrote My Way with the idea of, if Frank Sinatra was writing these lyrics, what would they be? So cool.
Damn.
So cool. Songwriting, man. All these fucking silent songwriters. I mean, he's not a silent guy, Paul Anka, but nonetheless, all of these fucking songwriters are just rolling in it. That's where it is, eh?
Sometimes I think of that. I'm like, oh, if I could just like write one hit song and then retire.
It's so good.
Living the dream.
And then you look at people that just write hit song after hit song
You're
after
like,
hit
how do you
song
do that?
After hit song. Like Smokey Robinson. How do you write fucking hit song after hit song and not even just give them away, too? It's like, oh, I'll give this to the Miracles, which was his band. I'll give this to the Melvins. I'll give this to this. I'll give this to the Four Tops, blah, 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 blah. And just, or they even like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards before they started the Rolling Stones, like they used to write songs for people. That's
no
what
shit.
They did. They were like, this was Keith Richards described it as like, we were just practicing. Like these were shit songs. And Howard Stern was playing him these songs that became hits for whoever they wrote them for. And Keith Richards like, I don't even remember writing that.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, I you're telling me I wrote it. I believe he's like, yeah, you wrote it. Your name's on the fucking credits. You wrote it. He's like, well, okay. Well, that, to me, that was all practice for the Rolling Stones. Yeah. It was songwriters are fucking interesting as hell to me. Or Kelly, if you ever have a chance to listen to Kelly Clarkson in an interview, she's really interesting because she's just.
I saw her interview Dave Grohl. I've never seen her be
her being interviewed because she's really just open and honest. If you get a good interviewer with her, she's really open and honest about stuff. And because she sings, she does a lot of covers because I guess her TV show. I don't know. Does Kelly Clarkson still have a TV show?
I think she covered 1979 by the Pumpkins.
Yeah, she did that on her TV show. So she does a lot of covers and stuff. And so she talks about like being a medium for this other songwriter and how she enjoys that being a medium for another songwriter. Because Howard Stern's like, it was Howard Stern that I saw. And he was like, how do you choose which covers you're going to do and how you're going to do them? And are you ever worried you're not going to nail it and blah, 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 and yada, yada, yada. She's really interesting, Kelly Clarkson. Because she can also sing.
I love
But then
Kelly
she also
Clarkson.
Won American Idol. But
that
she also
blows
was...
my mind. Like there's this show, somebody has an idea, they design a show, it's a talent show. Mm. Think of all of The Voice, American Idol,
yep.
The however many iterations worldwide there have been of that show. Mm-hmm. I think she won the first season.
She was the first one, yeah.
Because I remember I was working at HMV at the time. Mm-hmm, like I remember mm-hmm. getting her album. And fast forward 20 something years, she was a nobody.
Yep.
20 something years later.
Well, that's the thing.
She's still like one of the world's biggest pop stars.
But she can also really
sing. She can absolutely sing.
So
but think of how many other people went through that show and other shows like it And we don't know who they are. We don't talk about that. I'm like,
so she speaks about this. She's like, one, I was working as a musician, or I was trying to work out as a musician way before I got on the show. So people don't see kind of the dues that I was paying along the way. But yeah, you get on the show and then you win the show. And that's the easy part of it. Like, that can happen, and you can be a semi-talented singer and win a show, but you'll never go anywhere, or you're not going to have the sustainability. The sustainability is the thing, right? And she's like, you can't have the sustainability unless you're talented. It's impossible. You might get your start with a little bit of talent and a whole shit ton of luck, but the sustainability, that's talent. That's talent. No matter what, no matter how you cut it, you got to find a way to produce a product that is going to appeal to a lot of people that they're going to purchase. That's fucking talent. To have a show that a lot of people are going to show up to and pay good fucking money to see this thing, that's fucking talent, right? And I spoke on this before. I was never a pop music kind of guy, and I never got Michael Jackson until I saw his documentary on the tour that he was going to do when he died.
The preparation for the OT shows. Yeah.
And that's when I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This dude is loaded with fucking talent. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And that's when I was like,
They don't call him the king of pop for nothing.
But it blew my mind about everything. Anyone you see on a screen and you're like, oh, they're not good at what, I'm like, no, they're fucking good at what they do. They're good at what they do. That's all there is to it. Or else they wouldn't fucking be there. They wouldn't be there decade after decade after decade. They're good
at what they do. It can be not your style of music, not your preference, but you can't deny talent. It's like we always joke about how many people, have you ever met someone who flat out says, I like Nickelback? Everybody fucking hates on Nickelback, yet we all know who they are.
I have a friend who has a Nickelback tattoo.
There you go.
We've got one person who proudly says they like Nickelback. You
know, we're not close friends.
But you know how hard it is? To write a fucking hit song after another hit song after hit after hit after hit that are radio friendly.
That's why Nickelback doesn't even care. They'll take all the shit.
You can say anything you want. They're like, fuck off. Who cares?
They're killing it. They don't care.
I don't care. I don't care what the world thinks of me. I don't care what any other musician thinks of me, because writing a hit, and when you as someone who plays music, when you actually analyze a lot of Nickelback songs, they're really interesting the way they're done. To be honest, like. Chad, what's his last name?
Kroger.
He is a talented songwriter. He is a talented songwriter.
I hate them so much.
I know you do.
Right, because it's not your preference, not your taste in music, right?
He is a talented songwriter. Some of the choices that he makes with melody, over certain chords and chord changes, it's talent. The formula of writing a song is, and again, to be able to create it as a hit one after the other, it's fucking talent. Now, you might not be a fan of the genre of the music. You might not be a fan of his voice. You might not be a fan of the whole look of the band, right? But at the end
on all three counts.
Right. But at the end of the day, you can't deny that song that was written for that fucking Spider-Man movie was not a very, very well-crafted song. It was.
Are you singing it in your head?
I remember the soundtrack. Please don't sing it to me. I don't know the song.
Chad's voice in my head. But it's a very well crafted song. And songwriters, man, such talented fucking people. It's so hard to do. Anyway, maybe it's not. What do I know? I'm getting a chub for music right now.
I see that.
Well, we always rap about music
because it's so interesting to me. It's the one art form that so many people attach themselves to. Like, who cares about fashion? People that are in fashion, right? For the most part, I feel like fashion is an industry that exists and it lives
in its own bubble.
Exactly, it's in its own bubble. Even with visual art, right? But music is one of these art forms that is just well beyond itself. And it gets to a point when a song is so big, it's not even the artist's song anymore. It's like it's taken on this whole other beast, this whole other meaning, and it's well beyond the original meaning of the lyrics. It's well beyond why we wrote this song and who it was about. It's got its own life of its own, and it will be listened to for hundreds of fucking years. It's the coolest thing to me. And it's coming from these dudes, these gals that just seem like they're fucking outcasts. It's like this weirdo outcast is this fucking talented motherfucker who created this beautiful art that the world is going to appreciate for generations. And it's so weird to me. It's cool and it's weird all at the same time. Anyway. Fucking weirdos. Right? Can you imagine being Eddie Van Halen? Holy fuck.
No. Right? No, I can't.
Right? Can you imagine being Eddie Van Halen as a kid and all you do is play your guitar? Like, all you want to do is play guitar. So that's all you do. You go to school, you come home, you play your guitar. You wake up in the morning, you play your guitar.
I was listening to this interview. So Rob Harvilla, he runs the podcast 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, which is funny because he's covered way more than 60 songs by now. And he did a joint podcast with, I can't remember her name, but this woman who runs a podcast called Bandsplain. And they did this two-part series on the Smashing Pumpkins, my favorite band. And the first episode was 4 hours long.
Mm.
And I've listened to the first episode, and he was saying, he's like, it's such a trip where you get these like guitar gods who basically by definition, to become a guitar god, you have to spend so much time alone perfecting your craft.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up performing to these crowds of 50,000 people, 100,000 people, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this wild dichotomy of absolute isolation and then just thrown to the wolves on stage in front of tens of thousands of
people. You're the nerdy outcast kid who wants to do nothing but explore on this guitar. And you do that forever, 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 forever. And somehow you find your way into the music business and you make it big. But you're still this fucking weird nerdy outcast who just wants to play his guitar. And everyone is thinking you're cool, wants to wear the clothes you wear, wants to get a tattoo of your name on them. And you're still like, this is fucking weird. It's gotta be. It's gotta be fucking weird. Has to be. How can it not be? How can it not be?
Yeah, I've got several Smashing Pumpkins tattoos.
Right?
It's kind of weird, I guess.
And that probably deep down inside trips out Billy Corgan a little bit. He's like,
he's used to it by now. Actually, you know what? I will say, I've met him several times, and I showed him the first time so I have the album cover Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, which just turned 28 this week.
It's good double album.
I have the album cover tattooed in my arm, and I've met him several times, and the first time I showed it to him, he said, oh, that's really well done.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, thanks. And he said, I've seen a lot of Smashing Pumpkins tattoos. Because people are always coming up to him being like, look at this.
Check
this
out.
And he goes, I've seen people get tattoos of lyrics, but the lyrics are wrong. Like, he said, I've seen lots of tattoos. He's like, but that one's really well done. I was like, thanks, man. And then I met him again a few years later.
Yeah.
Showed him again. Don't expect me to remember. Showed him again. He's like, you know, I've seen a lot of pumpkin tattoos. He's like, that one's really well done. He's consistent. Like, he said it twice. He must mean it.
Or he says that to everyone. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe he's one of the guys that's lying all the time.
Yes, we don't know.
Not even William.
No, he's nothing if not honest. He has no problems with insulting people to their face.
So is it weird when someone meets you because of the work that you do online, the online presence?
Oh my God, you know what's funny?
Is it weird because you've been on this podcast a little bit?
I have a funny story. So one of my regulars was out of town. She went to a spa a couple hours away from Toronto, and she was getting a massage, and she just kind of casually mentioned like, oh yeah, I'm from Toronto. I have a regular RMT there.
Yeah.
Somehow my name came up. Like, oh, you're from Toronto. Who's your RMT? I don't know. For whatever reason. Yeah, my RMT, her name's Nikki. She's in Toronto.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh my gosh, Nikki is your RMT? And this client has never heard of this podcast. She's like, why does this massage therapist like many hours outside of the city know? And so she came and she told, and basically this guy was like, so I'm a fan of her. So she came back and she told me everything. She's like, how does my massage therapist many hours away from the city who's never met you in person know who you are? I was like, so
I'm kind of famous.
There's this podcast.
Is that weird? Is that weird for you? Do you like it or do you not like it? Let's start there. You can say yes and it doesn't seem stupid.
Do I like it? I like it when I always get nervous when I know that somebody's, they recognize my name because I I know I can be fairly polarizing. Mm-hmm. So I'm always like, in a good way or a bad way? Like, is it which camp are you? Yeah. Are you one of the people who hates me, or are you one of the people who like let's decide what's going on? But I did, you know, going to the conference that you guys put on recently, it was definitely interesting walking around and being like, oh, there are people here who know who I am and I don't know who they are. Like, you guys get that all the time because of the podcast. Yeah. And I do too now. And I've had multiple people come up to me and say, I'm a fan, or you're a celebrity, which that part is weird. Like, it's cool, but I don't think of myself as famous, but I guess I am. Like, I've been on this podcast so many times. You guys have international reach, and I'm a loudmouth and I'm opinionated, and I am not always the most tactful person. So, and you know, I spend a lot of time on Facebook. I don't consider myself a keyboard warrior. I don't fire up the keyboard just to pick a fight, but I do get, I don't want to say argumentative, but I just find there's so much bad advice out there, and there's so much shame, like shaming other people, that I try to not come to the rescue, but like defend my stance and defend other people who are trying to do the same kind of things that I'm doing.
Right.
And then that I just ends up with winds up with me being recognizable.
You get that. You get recognized a lot too.
You both do.
Well, I run away. I don't really engage.
So we know Mark's answer is he doesn't like it. With me, the part of it that I don't like is I don't know how to act, because on one hand, I don't view myself as important. Like, when I say important, it's not like, oh, I'm not important. Like, I'm not different than any other therapist. Like, the things that I do for work means that more people might know who I am, but like, there's nothing important about me, if that makes sense. So when somebody's coming up to me, like, people will say things like, oh my God, I'm fangirling right now. And I'm like, I don't know how to act, because I'm like happy to meet them, but I'm like, this is like, I almost feel like why do you view me as important in any way? So I just don't know how to act. So I don't like it. I'm like, oh, thanks for listening, I'm glad. And then I get the hell out of there.
Yeah, I don't tell anybody anything. I never do. And even when they ask, I'm really reluctant to be like, yeah, that's my podcast. You know what I mean?
People have just started to recognize my voice. I didn't know that I had such an identifiable voice, but I was at two different...
Well, we know you look like every other white girl.
I look like everybody. So, I mean, if they only saw me, I might be able to get away with everything. It's my I need to get like a voice disguiser, you know, those like, I can sound like this. I was at this trade show in Red Deer, Alberta with Massage Therapy Media. Like, I was there doing media coverage, and we were also trying to network and meet people in Alberta, because Massage Therapy Media is producing a Canadian massage conference in Calgary next year. So it's beneficial to meet local Albertans, right? So I'm on this trade show floor and I'm meeting all these companies, and this woman from that, she had a booth on the trade show floor. She comes up from behind me. So she hasn't even seen my face. And she taps me on the shoulder from behind. I turn around and she's like, I knew it was you. She's like, you're Amanda, right? And I said, yeah. And so she introduces herself and she's like, I was just listening to you on the drive here. And just even that visual, I'm like, that is so weird. Like, you were listening to my voice on your drive to this trade show. And she goes, I had no idea you were going to be here. We ended up having a really nice conversation for like half an hour. She's been listening to us for years, and her husband own a business together. And, you know, I got a whole story from her, and it was a nice interaction. But at the same time, I'm like, how weird is that? Like, I'm just walking through a random trade show, not even in my own province, and somebody's like, hey, you're Amanda. I'm like, I am. I don't know how to act right now. Like, if I can get rid of like the weird, like, I don't know how to behave in those scenarios. Like, I don't want to come across as not being humble. Like, I don't want to come across as like, yeah, that's me. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm, but I also like, don't want to act like, I don't want to brush them off like it's nothing, because I do appreciate people who listen to us and who are supportive of what we do. So I really don't know how to act. Like, I need a coach. Somebody coach me. Tell me how to act when
how to be a celebrity 101.
Right. Like, can somebody create this course for me, please? I'll take it. I'll pay you.
Being part of the backdrop is so much more fun. It really is. Like, when
you try, but it's impossible.
It's not
now.
Impossible.
For you, it is.
It really isn't.
Didn't you say somebody thought you were white on like the last podcast that you heard? Like, somebody was
more
like, oh,
more
you were
than
white.
One person
at the Black conference. Like, yo, man, I thought you were white. Like, I sound white.
Are you doing a podcast? Are you doing a podcast episode where you talk about that? Like, I'm fascinated by this. I think it's awesome.
The Black Conference?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that there's a Black Conference.
We did a recording last night with one of the organizers who came in later in the game, and Mark met her at the conference. And she's cool, like, man. She's only been a therapist for 5 years. But she's doing all sorts of things. She's worked with pro athletes. She's getting really involved in massage therapy. She wants to get into teaching. So she was an interesting guest. And we talked about the experience of being at the Black Conference and how it felt for them.
Well, that's what you were saying about the exclusivity for the sake of inclusivity. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this publication I so badly wanted to write for.
But I'll give you an example of like how we were in Halifax and I was just a guy running around with a camera. It's not even like, oh, you're one of the conference people. Like, I was just invisible, the guy with the camera. It wasn't invisible because I had a camera and I was probably annoying people with the camera. But nonetheless, I was just the guy.
The feedback survey confirms you were annoying some people.
Which is funny because I'm the fucking reason why we were there in the first place. Yeah. So be annoyed. So, you know what I mean? But any which way. So I like being part of the backdrop like that versus, for example, the conference that I just went to. The organizers liked that they were being acknowledged as the organizers. Do you know what I mean? Like, they got up, and I understand why they did, but they got up, they did a bunch of speeches and all the rest of it. Like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't, as a matter of fact, every time we do a Canadian massage conference and we're doing our opening sessions, like, you guys do stuff and they're like, well, you're going to join us. I'm like, no, I'm not.
It actually frustrates the hell out of me. He knows that, and I'm very open about it.
I'm going to stay here and run the soundboard.
Because I don't want to be on stage. But I don't have somebody that choice. Somebody has to do it.
Right.
And then I hate being the Amanda show. So I want it to be, like, I just feel like we're a team that puts this together. Like, yeah. I want a little more involvement from everybody. But, like, Mark does so much behind the scenes.
I'm happy to be
there. And that's fine because you don't need to be front and center. Like, you already are front and center as the podcast host.
Well, the podcast
is
different. It's audio. Like, it doesn't matter here, right? Even with our Con Ed classes. Someone will ask me like, hey, is this your thing? I'm like, oh, yeah, kind of, you know. And I just, I'm never like, hi, I own Con Ed Institute. Never. It's all, I won't even mention it unless someone asks me. Like, what's your role here? I'm like, I teach some stuff. You know, I organize some things.
Oh my God. My own family didn't know for at least the first year that we were doing Con Ed. My mother asked me because we contracted my brother, as you know, to come in and teach part of the business course because he's an accountant.
Cool.
So my brother teaches with us maybe 2-3 times a year. Yeah, it's great. So my mom now knows that my brother does a little bit of contract work with us. And so one day we were having a family dinner. My brother and I are talking about work. And my mom says to me, so how does this work? Like, how do you get paid? Like, I assume a certain percentage of the classes you teach go to the Institute. And I said, what Institute? She goes to Con Ed Institute. And I was like, you're right, mom. A lot of the money goes directly to Con Ed Institute. The beautiful part of that is that bank account is mine. She had no idea that we owned Con Ed Institute. Wow. She knows that like we teach continuing ed, but she thought we just like got in with some company and we teach classes that we've developed here. I'm like, no. The company is ours.
I like that. I like that. That behind the scenes thing. That's more my jam.
Speaking of Con Ed Institute, I have a course.
Is your course is good?
Yeah, let's plug it.
I have a course that I run through Con Ed Institute, your continuing education company. It's called Make Money as a Massage Therapist.
Tell me 5 ways I can make money.
Give away all my secrets?
Sure.
Number one, buy Nikki's course.
Yeah.
2 things.
Okay. I will say one of the biggest lessons. So this course it's less geared towards self-employed massage therapists. There are lots of business coaches out there for people who want to go solo and do their own thing. And that's great. I hired one. Go for it. Highly recommend it. I found when I was fresh out of school, there's no guidance for people who are just graduating and going to work for other people. And you're an employee and you're a contractor and you don't know what's what or where to work or what the options are, how to negotiate your contract or what to even look for, how much money you can make or what the rules are. So I made that course for those people. So 2 tips. I would say the first one, which is a big one for me, if you're going to work for somebody else, if you're going to work for a clinic or a spa or a studio or wherever, some other business, do not work for a place that does not have and honor a cancellation policy. In other words, do not work for a place that will let clients book in without either prepaying for the appointment or leaving a credit card on file so that they can get charged if they cancel on short notice. Yes. Too many businesses run without any kind of cancellation policy, which means you're going to go work there. People are going to cancel on short notice. You're not going to get paid. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend just don't even apply to places like that. And if you're a clinic owner and you're listening to this and you don't have a policy in place and you don't require credit cards on file for people to book, change that tomorrow. Mm. So that would be number one. And then number two would be really figure out what you want to do. And that might take some time. You might have to practice and get out and dabble and try this and try. I worked at a spa and a chiro clinic when I first came out of school because I didn't know what I wanted to do. But at some point, figure out what you want to do and go do that and make your career work for you. Make your career give you your ideal lifestyle instead of just accepting the status quo, doing what everybody else is doing, because most massage therapists, but most people in general are overworked, underpaid, bitter, burnt out, resentful, or just kind of complacent, like just accepting, just taking what's given to them without going for more. And if you want to love your career without burning out, without being bitter, without being resentful, and you really want to do meaningful work and get paid well, then you have to do things that other people aren't doing, which means you have to stop asking strangers on Facebook for advice. And
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. And just following, like going with the flow and following the status quo. If you do that, you're going to have a perfectly average career, and maybe that's what you want, and that's fine. But if you want more, go get that. But you got to decide what that is. Nobody can tell you what that is. You got to figure out what you want and then find a way to go get that. And if you figured out what you want and you don't know how to make it a reality, there are people out there who can help you.
Last thing, and I'm curious, what do you think about the person that's got everything to say about the industry? They're super opinionated about stuff. They don't like the way things are. They don't like the way CE education, like continuing education, goes. They're not really big fans of CMTO, the college policies and what they do. They don't think that RMTAO does enough. Do you think that those types of people should just try to get involved somehow? Or what do you think they should do? Because, like, for example, I saw someone posted like, hey, the RMTAO is looking for board members and the CMTO is looking for non-council members and all the rest of it. And I always sit back and say, you know who's not going to attempt to go into these positions? All these fuckers that sit around complaining about shit and are running their mouth on how things should be and things should be and things should be. And I'm like, you're backseat driver here. You have the opportunity to get into the driver's seat. So why don't you take it? What do you think that opinionated person should be doing? Or do you think they're doing exactly what they should be doing?
I mean, it's what we were saying before. If you really want something, you'll find a way to make it work. Mm. And some people just want to complain. So who am I to, I can't stop them. I can't stop the internet from complaining. You know, you get what you give. Like, it's, I think Mel Robbins said this recently, like, you're either in the stands or on the field. Mm-hmm. And people in the stands love to shout about how things should be done. And that's, you make your choices. Like, if the whole, you know, what's that phrase? Like, God grant me the serenity, the courage to change the things I can, the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, whether you believe in God or not. That I like that. Just here's the, you know,
choices. The things
I don't
you can't
love the
change.
CMTO. I don't love everything about the RMTAO. I think they're doing the best with what they've got. You know, they're working on limited means, and yeah, it's, you can complain if you want, but like how is this beneficial? Where is this getting you? What, how?
Sometimes I think, remember, the internet's a crazy big place, and it's easy to, like I said, I think we all kind of like go online now expecting someone to either be offended, be ridiculous. Like, it's, I don't know. I get this feeling that everybody's looking for somebody to do something wrong instead of actually like really seeing what's there. And I think there's some people who are genuinely just complainers. Some people really in life just like to complain and that's their thing and that's fine. And people like drama and that's their thing and that's fine. You know, you do you. But I think there's also people who use the internet as a place to like get ideas and get support and get whatever. And clearly that is not working. You go online, like I, you know, like this girl we started our conversation with, or woman, sorry, she's not a girl, she's in her 20s. And she might have just been really looking for like you said, like, how do you people do this? Like looking for something. And then she either got like, yes, girl, 100%. Cause you know, people want to shout like, yeah, this is not normal, or stop crying, buttercup. When maybe she was just looking for like some sort of encouragement, like you have choices.
Isn't it weird how they went to like, oh, honey, oh, buttercup, oh, I was like, really, guys? Like, I might not have agreed what she said, but I don't think I would have been throwing those
like
words
condescending.
Around.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
a lot of people were very condescending with her. And I don't necessarily think she deserved it. We know nothing about this woman other than that video. Like, I have no idea who she is.
What do I know? I still use the term broad.
That's the nature of the internet, though. Like, I know every time I come on this podcast, especially if there's wine, or every time I say something on Facebook, or, you know, I'm nervous about some of the things I said in my course. I'm like, I put a disclaimer on it. Like, I'm like, I'm going to rub some people the wrong way. Oh, by the way, conedinstitute.com/money.
Are you a mover and a shaker?
It depends on who you ask.
I'm asking you, are you a mover and a shaker?
But what do you mean by that?
I don't know. What do you think? Like, I mean somebody by that? Who you answer the way you think I mean it.
Mover.
Are you
a
mover and a shaker?
I don't know if I use the mover and a shaker. It depends on what you mean by that. I think I've always been ambitious.
Yeah.
And I like...
Do you have the power of influence?
Apparently.
And you recognize that?
People tell me that they've made changes to their life because of things that I've said. I get people all the time telling me, I raised my rates because of you, or I honored my cancellation policy because of you, or I quit my job because of you. Like, that's a great feeling.
Have you ever had someone reach out and say, I listened to you, I tried, and I failed at it, and I kind of attribute this to you.
I know. I don't think I've been blamed
right. For
anything. Like, this is all your fault.
Right.
You told me I raised my rates and everybody left and this is all your fault. It's not like that. I definitely have had people reach out and be like, when does it start working?
How do you feel about when that happens?
I just tell them, like... Because I've had people be like, oh my gosh, I don't have any, like, I'm not fully booked and I've had a slow week, and, you know, and it's like, okay, but you've been in business for like a month. Like, right. I just say it's a long game. And also, I can't tell people, I can't predict how this is going to work out for you. All I can tell you is like, look, here's how I did it. Right. This is what worked for me.
Yeah, you're not there 100% of the time watching how they interact with people, how they handle their treatment plans and cancellation policies and rebooking. You don't know.
So the same way that it makes you feel... makes you feel happy, makes you feel good, whatever the word is that you're going to use when someone reaches out and says, thank you, I listened to your stuff, I've started to employ some of these things, I've seen some success, and it makes you feel a certain way, right? Do you feel like you had any part of that, or you're just like, hey, I just gave some advice and you happen to take it? Or do you kind of wear that a little bit as like, I can put that into and tick that box under me as a accomplishment number one, right? And if you do, then do you also wear it the other way when someone says like, hey, when's this going to happen? And do you also wear it like, oh, fuck, like, do you know?
Like, I'm responsible?
A little bit. Right? Because I feel like if you would do it one way, then you would also kind of do it the other.
Yeah.
Like, if you feel good about it when someone had a success with it, then you might feel also not so good about it when they're expressing that, hey, I'm not really having the success I thought I was going to have with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've made recommendations to people where some, you know, they might do something that I did. And if it doesn't work out, I'm like, or if I recommend something and they have a negative experience with this thing that I've recommended, like... Yeah, I feel, you know, but I tend to interact with the people who really reach out to me for advice. Like, there are people who just try to attack me and shame me, and their only purpose is to just cast stones.
Right.
And then there are people who come to me for advice because they think I have something to say, or they want something that I have, or they believe in something that I'm doing. And if I say, well, here's what I did, and they do the same thing and they have a negative experience or it doesn't really work out,
right.
I've definitely, I've had that. And I'm like, I'm so sorry for recommending this product or service. And, you know, but they've never blamed me for it. Like, I think I tend to attract reasonable people. Mm-hmm. So they'll be like, they know that I would not recommend something that I didn't believe in. So maybe I've recommended some product or service and that thing has since morphed and or changed or doesn't work the same way, or they had a different experience with it. It's, they're not coming to me being like, this is all your fault. Mm. It's, oh, I did this thing and I didn't have a good experience with that and it didn't work out the same way for me. Or I tried this thing that you suggested and it didn't really work. I'm like, this is why I say, I'm like, I can't tell you this is guaranteed to work for you. All right. I can say is this is what worked for me.
Mm. Interesting.
So, but it keeps me going when people come and they, cause I get a lot of, there's a lot of woman on woman hate out there. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of shame. There's so much shame out there. And that's just the nature of the internet. If you have any kind of presence or take a firm stance on something, you're going to get backlash. Like, you have to expect that. But when people come and say, hey, you said this thing and it really resonated and I made a change, or I'm making more money because, like, I've had people reach out and say, I'm making more money than I ever have in my entire life because of you.
Right.
Like, and I don't take full responsibility. I'm like, well, you're the one who did the work, but that keeps me going. Nice. And that's why I created this course. And that's why I'm constantly on this podcast. And that's why I gave the talk at the Canadian Massage Conference, which was all about, like, the two biggest reasons why massage therapists are under earning the way I see it is because they think that they can't earn more money, or they see that it as a possibility and they're shamed out of it. They think that they shouldn't. And I had people message me and say that my speech brought them to tears.
Nice.
That was because of the music you added. I'm like, oh, the music wasn't there when I gave that talk. There were no tears.
That was mood setting music.
So that, and
no one cares about your life mission, okay?
That post got deleted, didn't it?
Yeah, I think. Like that.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah, fun. We've been going for a while. Sorry, guys.
This is fun.
It's always fun hanging out with Nikki. Plus, she always travels with wine. Not always. Only when she's coming to see Amanda. I'm not going to say that because her personal trainer will give her shit about it. Don't worry. She brought the wine for me. I had two glasses. She only had one.
I was good today, guys.
Right on. This was fun. Thanks for hanging out. This was good.
Thanks for having me.
Take us out.
Okay. If you want to learn more about my course, check out conedinstitute.com/money. And you guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.